Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Hey, Gio.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Oh, great. Just want to ask you something.
What's that?
Do you own or rent a home? That can be hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico, because Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy.
You mean if I'm already a customer and I have auto insurance, if I bundle up, I'll get a better deal?
That's right. See, you get it. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Now, let's get started with some classics. Hello and welcome to Carolla Classics for February 22nd, 2020. It's a lot of twos in that date. My name is Chris Loxamana, executive producer of The Adam Carolla Show. And with me, Carolla archivist, superfan Giovanni.
Happy 2-2-2-2-2-2-2, everybody.
Yeah. Well, this day is also very significant, G, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But first, I want to remind everybody, whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today. All right, for those who are new tuning in, this is the show we're going to play some clips, highlight some of the greatest moments of the Adam Carolla Show. And today's very special because February 22nd is the anniversary of Adam sitting down to record a podcast. 11 years ago.
A dedicated podcast.
Yeah, that's right. So
fans have actually asked me to give a recap. It's something we don't really consider because we assume people listening know some part of the history of the show.
No, give it.
But I've gotten like four or five different requests. Like, what do you talk about when you're talking about podcast, morning show? So really quickly, let's give them a little rundown of Adam's broadcast history. He went on Loveline in 95 with Dr. Drew and Ricky Rackman. Then in early 96, it was Adam and Drew. He lasted 10 years. He ended his run in November of 2005. And then in January of 2006, he took over for Howard Stern on the West Coast when he went to satellite radio. And he had a morning show which ran in Los Angeles and a whole bunch of other affiliates. It was really popular, kind of in every possible different market, Vegas, Seattle. It's number one. It's crazy. Really great show. Ran 06 to 09. That station flipped formats and went to the Jack FM format where they just have no employees and they just play automated music. And when that happened, he had to start up a new gig, and he started this podcast. The morning show had been released on iTunes for several years, and it already was podcasted. It was a radio show podcast, and this was going to be a dedicated podcast all on his own. And this is the very first episode where he announces his plan, what he's going to do. And we played this to death. We played it in full, his best of. We played it a million different times. It's an 11-year anniversary. So I try to find a nice, funny chunk from the middle that hadn't been overused. And that's exactly what this is. It's Adam Carolla Show, Episode 1, featuring Adam Carolla. Recorded 2/22/2009 and released 2/23/2009, 11 years ago.
Happy Achievement Day.
I'll tell you what, I'll do a couple of rants. I'll do a couple of just the kind of funny shit that you guys enjoy. And like I said, you put it up there, and I'll do it. We'll do it together, and we'll find it together. And we'll just go through it together. It's interesting. I really think we're on the brink of something. You know, when I was talking to Bill Simmons about this, and I did his podcast a couple of days back, and he was saying that cars are going to come with the internet real soon. And once that happens, I think that's going to be the breakthrough. And I think, you know, I went to a building in the middle of Wilshire Boulevard, in the middle of Los Angeles. It was 20 stories high, and it had a parking structure. And somebody had to pay for the security, and the guy who watered the plants in the lobby, and the guy who worked the floor buffer in the lobby, and all the sales, and all the studios, and the whole thing. And right now, I'm sitting in my office, my kids are asleep, my dog's at my feet, and I'm sitting staring at the view of the city, and we're all alone, and the only overhead I have is the terracotta tile that's above me in the roof. And I think there's a way to do this. And I need your help. And again, I'm in it for the big picture and I'm in it for the long term. So I don't need to make any money, not for a while. I want to build. I want to build a community here. So what do we talk about? Well, I got my made-up movie. I'll give you that so it just doesn't sound like I'm just screaming and ranting out of a window here, like network. And I have just a couple of thoughts. First off, I took a shit today, and I don't know if you guys have this, but about every 155th shit I take doesn't smell like one of mine. You ever have that thing where you take a shit and you go, "Who shit was that? That wasn't one of mine. Was that one of mine? Did someone else's shit just come out of my ass? How'd that shit get in there? What'd I eat?" And you think to yourself, "Nah, same stuff I eat every day, and I eat different stuff every day. It's really like I just walked into a bathroom and somebody took a shit." And then there's a weird sort of perverse pleasure in it. It's like, I'm smelling someone else's shit and enjoying it. Yeah, I got you on a technicality. Came out of my ass. The other one, as it pertains to shitting, I won't go scat too long, but about every 183rd shit, I get the, "That smells like cat shit. What'd I do? I eat some kibble or some giblets or mouse? Why does that smell like cat shit?" You guys ever get that? Am I insane? Have you ever done that? It smells like a cat just shit in this toilet. I'll talk to Dr. Drew about it. I'll work that one out. The other thing I was thinking about today, I was at a kid's party. Well, first off, I got to play you something. Horrible gifts to get kids. Dr. Bruce, anyone who listens to Love Line long enough knows Dr. Bruce. Dr. Bruce got my kids, well, I could tell you what it is, or I could just blow into it. It's real funny, except for when you hear that shit going off all night and all goddamn day. Don't get kids gifts that make noise. No whistles, no bells, no drum kits. It's right up there with silly string on the retarded gift buying registry. Really? You should be sued for doing that. And I've been hearing the, and by the way, it's not like the kids, and they got a harmonica too. It's not like I got John Popper in there blowing on that thing. It's just snot blowing through it, in and out, driving me nuts. Drive my dog insane. Don't do it. Get him a stuffed animal. Get him a Batman outfit. Get him something from Thomas the Tank Engine. Get him a princess wand. Get him fucking anything but something that makes noise. I'd rather get him a vibrator or strap-on or a fucking loaded gun. Anything. Anything but a slide whistle or a bell or silly string. I was at my buddy Donnie's party today. And there was a pirate, speaking of kids. And it's funny seeing these guys, you know, because when you were a kid, they were heroes. Like, look at the princess. Look at the pirate. Now it's pathetic, right? Because you know the guy. He's 41. He's been divorced 3 times. Shit obviously hasn't worked out because it's Sunday and he's getting $8 an hour to dress like a pirate at my buddy Donnie's kid's birthday party. And they wear the pirate outfit, and everyone always wears the whole outfit, but the part they cop out on is the shoes. You guys know what I'm talking about? Whenever they do anything, I don't care if it's a pirate, I don't care what they're dressing as, whether it's a Shrek, a pirate, Batman, Superman, it's always the shoe part they cop out on. This pirate, his shoes had Velcro, two Velcro straps. I thought, really, you couldn't even go with laces? You couldn't even go with a pair of Chucks? Velcro? Velcro from 1489? Velcro? The shit NASA invented in 1979? Velcro? Really? But they were black. And that's where these people get their pass. I don't mean the guy was black. I mean the shoes were black, although the princess was black, which was confusing to my daughter, but I'm still waiting for her to ask. Thank God she didn't blurt out anything. But the point is, the guy had black, like, Reeboks on with the Velcro strap. And I thought, you know, if you get the right color, you'll get the pass. And that's the cop-out, because it's not about the color. It's about the laces.
And that was the very first Adam Carolla podcast back in 2009.
It's crazy, man. Do you ever think about where your life would be if this podcast didn't exist, Chris?
Constantly.
I mean, you could have a bunch of different jobs. You could be in production. You could have started with another podcast because this industry blew up at the time.
Exactly.
But if Adam's podcast hadn't started, would the industry have blown up? Or if you hadn't gotten involved with it, there's a whole bunch of different weird computations if you think about it. The best things in my life came from helping and being involved with this show, and like all the things I did to help this show have resulted in my favorite parts of my existence. And I assume the same is true for you.
I couldn't put it better myself, Gio. I'm happy this podcast exists. I'm happy to be here, and I love where all this is heading.
It's great.
Yeah. All right. Now let's get going with our next clip. And this one features Adam's first guest.
Maybe.
Well, we'll get into that. We'll get into that moment. But as we release these, Adam's first guest on the podcast, Dr. Drew.
Back and to the left. Recorded supposedly on 2/23/2009, released on 2/24/2009, the second episode, Adam is trying to get his staff and family to understand the new dynamic and how he now works from home. And somebody left the phone on, which resulted in that phone meeting an unfortunate end with a door. And then after that, Adam and Drew play therapist and a patient and try to resolve what his issue is with everybody around him. While he's in his bathrobe, Michael Narron actually drew a fantastic portrait of this very scene, which you can find online, and I'll send a new copy to Chris, maybe we can put up on the site or something. But until then, Adam Carolla Show, Episode 2, with Dr. Who? Dr. Drew.
Hey, Chickapees, Ace Man here with my good friend Dr. Drew. By the way, Dr. Drew can be found on VH1's Sober House, MTV's Sex with Mom and Dad, and soon to be found at the bookstores with the Mirror Effect. Good to see you, Drew.
Good times.
I want to say something. First off, thank you. All my minions, right?
Yeah.
All my minions out there. That's what I like about working with Drew as opposed to Bonaducci. Because I'd say, Danny, did I mispronounce that? And he'd be like, I'll kick your ass. I'd be like, all right. All my minions out there, you have gotten us to over 200,000 podcasts. Well over 200
nice.
Podcasts of our very first one, which
well
was
done.
Yesterday.
That's
and
amazing.
I wasn't even funny. And
is that unusual? this one's going to be funny.
Get prepared. We have to go buy more bandwidth. So I want to thank, again, Giovanni and all the folks out there in Carolla Nation, although I know that sounds retarded, who got on the internet. And obviously you guys went out and went door to door. You did something. You did
Twittered.
You did the equivalent of version of going door to door. You did the internet version of it because 200,000, well over 200,000, could not have been done without you. So thank you. And it is for that reason we're back again.
Sure wasn't the one guy named Lou just doing it over and over again.
I'm sure. Yeah. Okay. I'm sure it was my dad.
Yeah.
You know
oh,
him.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure your dad.
He was on the computer.
Oh my God. That's the funniest thing
Here's
I've
how
heard.
Confident.
Wait, on the computer already.
Right,
forget it.
Watch this. Here's how, right. how confident okay. I am. All Here's right. A, how confident I am. My dad will never hear this. And B, how much I love the internet. Dad, fuck you. Fuck you. I'm not yours, by the way.
Let's keep going.
Do you know that? Obviously, I'm not yours.
Well, let's keep going down this path.
Decent looking.
All those years
I make money.
Of the after-hours conversation on the freeway. We talk on our phones as we drive home. About your grandma, this is your chance.
Oh.
Or your mom. Let's bring your mom
old cunt.
In.
Jesus Christ.
God.
And by the way, we're looking to get sponsorship.
And so. By the way, Michael Nairn, let's turn this into a cartoon, can't we?
All right. So, Dr. Drew, you're heading off to work. Old job.
Yes.
In a couple of few.
That's right. What the hell is that?
I'm going to.
Is this the intro music?
This is what drives me insane in life.
Uh-oh. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
That's what drives me insane in
life. Just let me paint a picture here.
Ace
got up, picked up the phone, and tried to heave it through the door.
It's the exact same goddamn phone I had to throw when I told my wife I have the world's busiest day. I have half an hour. Half an hour to take a goddamn nap. Half a goddamn hour.
Lynette, stay
and there
here.
It was.
Go,
Lynette,
go,
what was the last
go,
thing we
go.
Talked about? What
Run.
Was the very last thing
Run.
We talked about? What was the very last thing we talked about?
Hi, honey. Natalia.
Jesus
Hi, Natalia.
Christ. Ugh.
Don't worry about your dad yelling.
Ugh.
It's okay. He's fine.
No, let me tell you why I'll tell you why I sound like a big dick to everyone all the time. Because let me explain my life. Let me explain my life to everyone. I had the world's busiest day. Last week, I was slammed. My radio show was being canceled.
Yeah.
At the same time my radio show was being canceled, I was selling a sitcom
to CBS.
CBS. Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Congratulations
on
that, by the way.
Thank you.
Cool.
So you'll have not even a walk-on role on that.
God damn it.
I said to my wife, I said, I'm going to have the world's busiest day last Thursday or Friday. I said, I'm going out to CBS to pitch at noon. I'm going to be tired. I'm going to be hungover from doing my show. I don't want to have bags under my eyes. I got to get a nap. And she said, you come right home from work and you take a nap. By the way, she did the chick math thing. Like, come home at 10 o'clock, take a 2-hour nap.
But now,
like,
wait a minute.
The show ends at 10 o'clock.
Didn't she just go, you have a tough day. Let me tell you about my.
That's your wife.
No, come on. That's everyone does that.
Lynette is wildly unrealistic. So she says, come home. I said, the earliest I can make it home is about 10:45. If I work hard, I can sleep. I can take a half-hour nap. I can take a half-hour nap, and then I can get up, shower, and get to CBS and pitch my ass off because my career depends on it, my livelihood at this point. So she said, fine. So I hustle home at 10:30. I fly out of my clothes, and I give her the lock down the house. I can't be disturbed for a half an hour.
Did you put the lovey shades on?
Put the lovey, big old lovey padded shades on.
Earmuffs, yeah.
Everything. Roll myself up in a cocoon and go to bed. I just fall asleep. I set my timer for half an hour. I have 10 minutes. 10 minutes into it, I fall asleep, and I hear Vivaldi go off. And then I look up and see that her phone is just sitting, not on the end table next to my head, but just on the next table over, right out in the middle of nothing. And I thought, really? Really? Now I can't go back to bed because I'm pissed. It's not because I was woken up. It's because I'm pissed.
Yeah, yeah.
So I go, all right, listen, God damn it. And I'm pissed off. I get up and I throw the phone. And I say, Jesus Christ, woman. Half an hour. That's all. Just trying to recharge the battery. And by the way, just trying
Engineer
to go out.
Johnny liked the woman comment.
Just trying to go out and bring in some bacon. Got ass canned from the last gig. Looking to go out. Looking for the nap. So tonight, 10 seconds before we went on the air, I said to her, listen, Lynette, you're in charge of the phones. Keep the phones out. Keep the door shut. And I went and took the two phones, my phones, brought them, threw them in the other room, put a pillow over them. You're in charge of the phones. What, 3.5 minutes into it? What happens? Her phone. Lesson learned. Valuable lesson learned. That's the whole thing.
But
now, listen, when you used to be able to hit women, don't you think they learned? Seriously.
Oh, my God.
This phone thing would have never happened again if I was Ike Turner.
Yeah, but something else much more intense.
But I would have beaten the shit out of her the first time. It would have never happened again. All right. But I'm
supposed. But here's the problem you have, Adam.
What?
This is, and you've got to take this in. You assume everyone else's brain works like yours.
No, I don't. That's why I tell them what to do all the time.
No.
If their brain worked like mine, they would have thought to get the phone out of there.
But
no, I don't. I assume everyone's an idiot.
No, but you
and so I tell them, take care of the phone.
Right, but because
I don't tag the phone,
take
it to them and hand it to them.
But you assume that they accept and understand your motivation for wanting it moved, and you skip that step. Because they don't have the same motivation.
They have zero motivation, and I have no motivation.
No,
I mean, I have motivation. I cannot motivate.
You can, but you skip that. You got to. I don't know how you get that across to people because your brain is exquisitely attuned to everything all the time, right? And so it's a huge. When that phone goes off, it's a major.
The major thing that does it, and I'll tell you, I've told this story before. Dr. Drew in studio, by the way.
Who?
I've told the story before.
I don't
remember we used to do Love Line?
Yeah, yeah.
I'll explain exactly how my brain works.
Yeah.
We used to do Love Line, the TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And remember, we would sit down, start the show, and at a certain point, we'd bring out the guest.
Yes.
Hey, everybody, it's the lead singer from Jamiroquai.
Yeah.
And then I would stand up, and you would stand up, and you would feel that tug. And that tug would be your mic pack popping off the small of your back and swinging between your legs like so much testicles when the guy came out. And then you would come off stage and you would say to the sound guy, hey, man.
Brian. Was that?
Probably Brian. Hey, Stone or Brian. I'll go with Brian.
Brian was this.
No, Brian. No. Yeah. Whatever.
Okay, go ahead. Anyway,
Hey, Broseph.
Yeah.
This is the third time this has happened this week where the mic pack has popped off. How about you tweak the thing, put some gaffer's tape around it, and make sure it's stuck on there good and tight? Because when it pops off and it's swinging and tugging on my collar, it's very distracting. And then he goes, done and done. And then the next show comes around, and I stand up and I go, hey, everybody, welcome Wild Orchid. And I stand up and I feel the tug of the mic pack. I'm not angry at the part where I'm feeling it tug on my shirt. And I'm not distracted by that part.
Yeah.
I'm enraged that I've discussed it so many times with the same effing person, and now I'm completely brought out of it. I'm completely distracted.
Yep.
I'm completely angry. And everyone says, well, it's just a mic pack. Get over it. It's not the mic pack. It's the thing that we've had 11 conversations about, the goddamn mic pack. That's what enrages me.
I know.
What can I do?
I don't know, because I've tried to fix. I've tried to work on that with you for a long time.
Why me? Why not everyone else?
Because everyone else is. They seem unyielding at this point, right? Everyone else.
I'm going to go with
right? Yeah. And so, if you're going to live peaceably in the world, we got to figure out how to communicate.
I came home last Thursday after then meeting with Fox at 5 in the afternoon down on Motor and Bumfuck and came back here at 7 o'clock. And when I saw my wife, I was like, I am pissed about that phone.
Yeah.
I have put in a 17-hour day. I wanted a half-hour nap, and you left your goddamn phone right next to me.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I gave it to her with both barrels. And she gave me the message sent, message received. But evidently not. And that's my point. Now, what am I to do?
I don't know. I don't. I wish I could solve it, because I can tell.
Should
you.
Should I just not pay attention? Ah, la di da. The phone's going off. Well, this is awesome. In the middle of the goddamn podcast, after I just discussed the phone.
You know what it
or
is?
Or should I just quietly get up and walk it over to the other side of the room, or hope it doesn't happen again?
You have to.
And what tone? What tone? What tone should my conversation?
I'm wondering, like, what happens when your kids get older? You're worried about.
Oh, well, the kids just run for cover and smoke pot.
Yeah, but, the boy's going gay. She's gonna climb on a pole and never get off.
Don't worry, there'll be a payback on that.
What
one.
Should my tone be, though?
The receiver,
your phone having, once again,
having come to understand, you have to be able to see it from your perspective, and so the like me or your wife.
Right.
And in order to have that priority in your head, you have to really receive and be acutely aware of how you're experiencing these things, so you're motivated to protect you against that.
Right.
Because the average person, when a gnat farts, it doesn't motivate.
Yeah.
But for you, it's don't let that happen again.
No, I understand. I have the hypervigilance, as you've diagnosed me many times, also with Asperger's syndrome as well, which I will fight you on. But the hypervigilance, I will not fight you on. And I understand. It's no different than when I'm building a project. I understand. I see things other people don't see.
Yeah.
That's why I have detailed discussions with them
that's the missing piece is they have got to see it from your perspective, not just hear your instructions. Because if they have a perception of how you're experiencing this thing, they're not going to forget that.
Me flipping out and throwing
doesn't do it? No.
Shall I hang myself?
No, it's. I don't know how to describe it to you. When it finally got through to me was that thing with the tests. You know that how distracting it was for you to be people filling out tests when we were trying to go on the radio.
The mirror effect, by the way, in bookstores mid March bookstores.
Big thank you to Adam Kroll on that for tolerating this.
Yes,
but when I finally understood what you were experiencing, then I had the motivation to make sure. Your perception was, I was consciously like undermining, or I had some intent to
stop punching your mic.
I can't even do it here, right?
Jesus Christ! You're like
attached to my head.
You're like a retarded time.
It's only around you, for Christ's sake.
You're like a retarded time life operator.
But when I understood what you were experiencing, then I magically had the motivation.
All right.
But you
why
assume,
must we go through
know,
that,
but you assume,
that step?
But the problem is you assume that people already understand fully and therefore are ignoring that or doing something really pernicious, you know, directly at you.
I know.
And by the way, I know you experience that now, so it puts more motivation behind me.
I know, but let me say this.
Yeah.
So much.
By the way, Kroll is dressed in no clothes.
I'm wearing a bathrobe.
He's wearing a bathrobe. His nuts are hanging out, and he's got slippers on. What the hell is
actually,
this?
My nuts are my left slipper.
I'm at home.
I'm at home. I dress to the left, as you know.
Yeah.
Drew and I are sitting here in my den. The kids are hearing Daddy rail in the next room. Dress. Lynette's packing her bags and crying. Here's the whole thing, though, Drew.
Yeah.
Why do they need to experience what I'm experiencing?
Because it's how so about different these, than the rest
But
of
how
this.
About this simple, pragmatic answer of when you leave the lights on, you
know,
burn kilowatts,
this
and you're
is some,
costing
you
me.
You are dealing with something I deal with every freaking day in my clinical practice because you—
Say the F word. We're on the,
every fucking day in my practice.
Yeah.
You are relying on memory. And memory is not a good source of motivation. You're relying on people to remember, first of all, to receive everything you say. And research.
Check out the phone.
I know, but research shows that people only take away 20%. So when I say
20%.
No, Adam, listen. So when I say I would like you to take the lisinopril once a day, one tablet once a day, and then I'll have your lab work for you. We just drew it now. I'll have it for you on Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
They leave and go, call back. They call back 15 minutes
oh,
later.
Yeah.
When do I take this medication?
Now everyone does that.
Okay.
I know.
So you're relying on memory to be the motivator as opposed to, oh, my God, poor Adam. If that phone goes off, I know how awful that is for him. And by the way, he's going to think that I am doing something directly at him, and he's going to feel that. Now all of a sudden it's not memory anymore. It's motivation.
Well, let me say a couple of things. First off, memory is you're going to the market. Here's a list of things to pick up.
That's
this is self-evident.
No, to you. To us, we have to remember it. I have to remember. Listen, she should know the phone needs
Look, when you go into a movie theater.
Jesus Christ, this is going to be some crazy cartoon, Michael Darren. We're arguing about the fucking phone.
When you go into a movie
that
theater.
He just heaved through the door, a fucking oak door, got a hole in it, shaped like a phone, where he threw the damn thing through.
Listen, I want to say a few things. First off, where does all the motivation need to come from with everyone these days? Do you know what I mean? Do you know how many times I've said to people, look, I'm paying you, do the way I tell you to do it.
Well,
I'm keeping the lights on in this place. I'm paying the mortgage. I'm paying for everything. Do it the way I say.
Yeah.
Where does it? No. Yeah. You need to approach it from a different angle.
No.
You're not getting through. How about just do what I goddamn say because I'm paying for everything?
Write it down.
I know it doesn't
that's
work,
what I
but
do.
I just.
That's what I do. Write it down.
No, I tell everyone.
Let's read it together and let's write it down.
I tell everyone to write it down, but here's my point. Why does everything need to be such a lesson? I mean, first off, why aren't more things just more self-evident, which is to say we're broadcasting out of here. Shut your pagers, shut your phones, move your cuckoo clocks.
Because people have to empathize and accept the fact that we have a point of view. We need quiet. We are doing something that we think is important.
I've tried that, work that. Honey, this is a corporation, and you're in it half and half with me. All right, let me just ask you this.
Yeah, yeah.
80 years ago,
yeah,
when our grandfathers were podcasting,
yes,
do you think their wives' phones were going off in the room, or were they downstairs, you know, canning fruits?
They were canning fruits, and we were out banging hookers.
Salting,
let's be fair. I mean,
salting meats for the winter. Yes, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
all right, Drew. Yeah. Donnie, how far into this thing are we? We haven't even talked about anything yet. Jesus Christ.
Shit, you could talk. Jesus.
All right. So, Drew, what is my new approach to make people think that the things that are important to me are important to them?
I don't know how you – that's what I was struggling with. That was the boring part of the conversation.
Go ahead. I'm ready to be bored again.
Because I don't know how you convey that. You have to get mad a few times, but people have to
– I blew up.
You bring out new headsets?
I blew up less than a week ago.
Yeah, no. But they have to accept where that's coming from. It's not just, oh, Adam's being an asshole. It's got to be, no, I have a different experience of the world than you do. And it's hard for me, Adam, to understand that you don't have that same experience.
Right.
That's it. They have to accept it. It takes a while. Right. Listen,
I couldn't hear a word you're saying because Drew, I mean, Donnie was over there punching a box. Quiet down. Loud enough.
What else? Let's talk about something else.
All right, let's talk about other things. All How's right. Loveline going?
Loveline's going great. Same old calls, same old stuff. Sober House is going great. Andy Dick and Jennifer Jimenez are on tonight, in fact.
So oh, really?
House. You watched Sober House?
Oh, yeah, I watched Sober House. Yeah, Jennifer's the den mom.
Yeah.
And Andy Dick.
Andy Dick is still sober, doing good. He is.
Is he? Now, how long, when did the show wrap?
August.
So he has
a court-ordered, you know, ankle bracelet on and stuff for alcohol monitoring.
Really?
Which really helps him.
He needs one on his penis.
Yeah.
Forget about the ankle bracelet.
No, I know.
Save a little money on material, City of Los Angeles, and put one on that guy's honker. Because he nails everything that moves. And it doesn't matter if it has a penis or an ass or a vagina.
No,
it doesn't matter.
Waka, whatever. He has told me that he is trisexual. He'll try anything.
And is he still that way?
I had a long conversation on Twitter last night with Rainn Wilson about whether or not mermaids have vaginas.
And we had the same one, too.
Yeah, I figured you would. And we decided they must have a cloaca, which is sort of an anus-vagina combined.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, you don't see.
What, is that something that, like, whales have?
Yeah, well, yeah, farm animals and things. And,
uh-huh.
Right?
Oh, yeah, like cows.
Right. I mean, you don't see it on the mermaids.
Like, cows don't have a vagina?
They kind of have one area there.
They have a cloaca? It's got to be nice for the bulls when they're drunk. Like, I don't know, general vicinity. Any port in a star. Moo! Why can't chicks have a cloaca?
Well, I mean, so that would we, be, have enough, we have hard enough time with the broken down parts.
That would be something that your penis went into and poop came out of?
I have to look it up, to tell you the truth.
I was talking to a guy way back when I used to have a radio show. He sewed himself up inside a cow
and crawled out of its asshole. I heard that conversation. And somebody said something about birthing, and he said that's the same canal.
I was confused by that.
I think that's what he was talking about, the cloaca.
Cloaca.
Yeah, that was a really weird conversation.
So hold on.
His dad was standing there.
I want to give a quick message for all our black listeners. That is not a good name for your daughter. That is a horrible name. Little cloaca.
And that was Dr. Drew, the very first guest featured on the Adam Carolla podcast back in 2009. So now Adam's... He has a full head of steam here. He's loving the podcast form, man. We're going to get going with another early clip from 09. But first, I want to remind everybody about Tommy John. That's right. When it comes to comfort down below, there's underwear. And there's Tommy John, the revolutionary clothing brand that's redefined comfort for Americans everywhere, including Gio and myself.
Oh, yeah.
So to put it simply, Tommy John doesn't give an F. They give three Fs, and that is fabric, fit, and function. Tell them, Gio.
That's exactly true. I've tried two of their product lines, the Second Skin and the Cool Cotton. They have many other items that I can't wait to try. I'm addicted to this company now. I've thrown all my other stuff. I am just buying Tommy John. I'm just wearing Tommy John. Even if they weren't sponsoring the show, I'm hooked. I'm still going to buy them forever.
That's right. So if you prefer to shop in stores too, you can find them in over 1,200 retail locations across the country. But get them now. Just go to TommyJohn.com/classics. For 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/classics for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/classics. Now, let's get going with our third clip today. This is also from 2009. This is the third episode Adam Carolla released for his Adam Carolla podcast, and it features Teresa Strasser and Brian Bishop.
Exactly. So this is chronologically a third episode, and we've always thought this was recorded after maybe 224, 2009, release 225. There's something we've always figured was after Drew. But on a recent episode of Gina and Teresa's show, Easy Listening, they have a Patreon bonus, they got into a discussion about Adam's first podcast, and Gina was talking about it. And Teresa's like, no, I was on the first podcast. We taped it after the party. And this is something that's never been revealed. And the Google Calendar, which I use all the time, I've been using for 11 years, it doesn't go this far back. It starts sometime in mid-late 2009. So before that, it was all emails. And I emailed Mike Chaffee to try to see if we could get this straightened out before the recording, but I haven't heard back yet. He's the only guy that may remember, or maybe Adam Carolla might remember, and that might be the only person we might be able to jog his memory and find out what actually happened. But according to Teresa, that Friday night after the station closed on the 20th of February 2009, they had a party at Adam's house. So maybe she got it wrong. Maybe it's a Saturday night on the 21st. But she's saying they went there and they recorded that night. And so then it begs the question, is Dr. Drew recording that night as well? Or is he the next night? Or is he actually after Adam's solo episode? So it makes us wonder if the recording actually went 3-2-1. Teresa and Brian Bishop, Drew, and then Adam's solo episode, or 3-1-2. It's very confusing. So until we know, maybe you'll spot some clues in this clip. This is episode 3, Teresa and Brian Bishop. And they wouldn't really be guests anyway, because they were cast members technically at this point. So this is from recorded Who Knows When, released on 2/25/2009. This is the second part of the episode. Last year, exactly a year ago, we played the first half of this. This picks up right after Adam is telling his anal carbuncle story. So if you want to hear that, go back into the Corolla Classics Archive, Podcast One Premium. You can find our back archive as well and go back and listen to all of our old compilations. Or you can just find this episode and listen to it in full. Right after he gets done with the anal carbuncle story, they go in-depth on some other stuff about Jimmy Kimmel and his urethra, as teased last year. Check it out.
I should get a brown heart. Yeah, a hemorrhoid.
You're right. You don't get a lot of sympathy.
No ass sympathy.
And a hemorrhoid's really just a punchline. It's not something that people see as a painful medical condition.
I've been a good bit is coming up with things that not that sound better than they are, but diseases or conditions that don't carry the sympathy with them.
Hemorrhoid and gallstones and things like that. Exquisitely painful. People sort of laugh. Anything to do with the penis or the urethra.
Right. No long-term harm. Yeah.
Right.
So
one time,
concerned.
Jimmy's urethra started to shrink.
Oh, no.
I could barely get semen out of it.
It took a lot of extra work.
Oh, my God.
No, it's just extra time.
That may have been what happened to my asshole. I don't know.
It was around the same time.
Jesus Christ. I got carpal tunnels yanking on that thing. No, his urethra shrank, and he couldn't pee. And it's like, you'll die if you can't pee, except
yet it's hilarious.
When people are laughing their ass off. When they're done laughing, they'll be mourning at your funeral. And he had to go to, I think, Dr. Drew, who essentially had to put...
same needle that was in your carbuncle.
Kebab skewers and essentially yolk out his urethra.
Shrunken
which is
urethra, though. Awesome name for a punk band.
Mm.
I like that.
I totally see shrunken urethra.
Opening
right now.
For carbuncle.
Carbuncle.
Carbuncle explosive.
That's the ass stuff, the urethra stuff, and also everybody has a cure all, and you're to blame. Like if you get cancer, you get cancer.
Right.
Oh, poor
dear.
It happens. If you have a hemorrhoid, it's like, sweetie, you're not eating enough fiber.
Right.
What did I
push,
tell you about? What
so
I tell you about pushing? What I tell you about tension? What I tell you about? What I tell you about the prescription, whatever.
My ass is
whatever.
The victim. Don't blame the victim.
Right. That's what it is. This is essentially the equivalent of you were raped. Why were you wearing the miniskirt?
Right.
Why were you wearing the miniskirt?
You were drinking.
Yes, your asshole's being raped. Yeah. If your asshole wasn't out taking Vicodin and
mixing with guys your asshole didn't know well.
Yeah. And eating the red velvet cake, then maybe your asshole wouldn't need an asshole kit right now.
Maybe your asshole should have laid away from the saltines and eaten the high fiber stuff.
What I don't need right now is another asshole lecture.
Yeah. Oh, man. I miss this. Don't you guys?
This is fun.
Yeah, except for the part where it's dark outside for the good reasons.
Right.
It's late at night, not early in the morning.
Yeah, it's real dark.
What time are you guys waking up? Oh, Teresa, you're getting
there. I'm still on my morning schedule. Yeah. Just been waking. Well, first at 4:30 and then today at 6.
Oh, really?
8:30 at the rooster.
Yeah.
I'm over whatever schedule I was ever on in a second, by the way. And here, I'll be honest for a second. I don't know if you guys have this serial killer gene that I have. Today and yesterday, by the way, and I've been busy, and we've been doing this CBS pilot, and by the way, looking to get Bald Brian involved with that, and many of the other players here on the Adam Carolla Show, especially the folks that don't have contracts to see them through the end of the year, and the people are living paycheck to paycheck. And granted, I've been distracted, and I've been doing movie pitches and all kinds of great and exciting stuff, but and this is part of the problem, it's a good thing as a human being and a bad thing as a husband and a father and a son and all that. It's as if I'd never done it before.
I literally
about this.
It is not the podcast. It is literally 2 days in.
And it's over.
And it's completely over.
Oh, yeah.
Completely in the rearview mirror. And I don't even, as I never did it before.
Out of sight of mind.
I have a similar feeling. I went to the gym and a couple people I didn't know came up and they said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sad. I feel terrible. I miss you guys. Like, what are they talking about?
The hemorrhoid will get, I can push it back up.
I know it's uncomfortable, but it's going to probably go away if I eat more fiber don't push.
Yes. Do you have that
what are
feeling?
Talking about? Yes. Completely.
And
completely.
Isn't that a great thing about being a human being? And, Paul Bryan, do you have that feeling?
A little bit. More so the days are sort of long with nothing to do. Nothing. I mean, now you guys got movie pitches and TV guide channel and stuff. When you're sort of waiting for the next thing to come around, the day seems kind of long.
What I do
I'm gonna
is
miss
I,
my nap. You know
yes,
what I'm saying?
I spend hours online looking for various genetic disorders my baby could have.
Sure. Oh, awesome. And the well, maybe it'll come out with a hemorrhoid on it. Or no, it comes out another hole. That's
right. Right, yeah.
The also, and again, it's what makes me a robot, and it's simultaneously the best quality you could wish your young unborn child has and the worst. Because you move on immediately, and it's all bigger and better, and on to the next thing, and you don't look back, and you don't sort of shed a tear and live in the past and all that kind of stuff. On the other hand, it sort of makes you an emotional robot.
Yeah.
Like you should really be wondering what producer Angie's up
right.
to and grieving the past and feeling all the feelings that come along with loss and pain and all that kind of stuff.
I guess I have a smaller version of that, which is like I wanted very badly at the time, like last Thursday and Friday, to reply to all the MySpace messages and all the emails I'd gotten. But if you people are listening, by the way, I really wanted, had of all intentions, to reply to the messages, say, hey, thanks a lot, thanks for listening, I appreciate it. But once it comes like, you know, today, Monday, Tuesday, and on, you're like, you're working on the next thing. You're kind of got wrapped up in whatever is on the horizon, whatever's next.
I think I would have dwelled a lot more if I wasn't pregnant. That has really helped in terms of going through the stages. Yeah, it just everything I hoped. I mean, it puts things like that in perspective. But I did have kind of a little emotional moment where I thought about the past 3 years and how, you know, I started out, I was single and I couldn't meet anybody. Then I met somebody and I got married. Now I'm pregnant and Brian is, you know, engaged and going to be married soon. And your twins are just gorgeous and they're running around here. And I felt like this incredible, just sweeping, saturating sense of gratitude. And I thought, I want to call Adam and tell him that I'll come and do his podcast anytime he wants me to be there.
Well, you know, it was a weird thing. I just had an impulse, and it was a radio impulse to reset. I was going to say, we're at my house, and Brian and Teresa are here, and we're having a goodbye party. And by the way, downstairs are producer Angie and pre-op board op Bill and Mike Chaffee and Dawson and Lynch and all the people.
Everybody, Yanira,
associated.
Ashley. Van.
Yeah, everybody associated with the show's out there drinking my booze, by the way, and enjoying my Mediterranean food. But one of the beauties of the podcast is we don't need to reset. Nobody tuned in halfway into this. And the only people that are listening are people that are tuned in, by the way. And a lot of people have talked about, you know, lamented the demise of the show and the radio station in L.A., but then all the affiliates as well. But it sounds cliche, but, you know, one door closes, another one opens. I've found a lot of people, and I know 300,000 of you can't be wrong. I think this is the wave of the future. I really do. And I think the big buildings and the big parking structures and the security guards and the goddamn Jack Silvers of the world, I think these are all dinosaurs. I really do. I think it's the internet. I think
based
it's the
on the
community.
Production piece he brought in on our last day, he's on the cutting edge? I don't understand. I'm
feel like Rick Dees must have shit that thing out in 1987.
That hit Rick Dees's carbuncle on the way out.
Yes. Our program director, Jack Silvers, final farewell production piece, I think about said it all in terms of his comedic sensibilities versus our own.
Nobody in the room is going to get this, but as they say on Project Runway, I'm concerned about the taste level. That is not chic. That is not chic. It looks cheap.
I was just looking at Mike Dawson and Mike Lynch sitting outside the studio waiting to come in and say their piece, say their final farewell, something poignant like, hey guys, it's been awesome, and here's Jack Silver's comedy bit.
Yes.
That was 20 minutes long.
And
20 minutes
would have been
time.
The funniest thing I'd ever heard in my life if I didn't think he was serious.
It could have been Warhol-esque.
Ironically, could have been the funniest
comedy
thing on the planet.
Yeah.
It could have crushed Spinal Tap.
Right.
If he didn't believe in it wholeheartedly and wasn't actually
slapping his knee,
actually attempting to be funny.
And this is a guy who's been telling me to keep it concise and keep it short and hurry it along. And that piece was just
and fucked out and from the like 70s. And it's a definite Rick Dees ripoff. And is just sensibly, I mean, as I was hearing it, it actually brought some nice closure for me because I was listening to it thinking, yes, this is why we're going off the air. That's right. The guy who hates Dana Gould and loves this shit, this is exactly why we're going off the air. But the great news is we don't have to deal with Jack Silver anymore, and we don't have to deal with CBS anymore, and we don't have to deal with the big high-rise building anymore. It's just this. It's our community. And we don't have to deal with borders or boundaries anymore. It's everyone around the world, everyone who speaks English, everyone with a couple of brain cells to rub together can listen to this show, and they can do it free of charge. And I feel guilty tearing you guys away from your loved ones and the party.
They're very sick of us.
And Molly. And the wine and tea. Have a little shot of the vino. It's not going to kill you.
Well, I thought that too, but apparently they mean it.
Is that the company line, by the way? Like the doctor can't. You can't give an inch. You know what I'm saying?
Here's why I trust my doctor.
Sure, have a glass.
My doctor. I said when I first got pregnant, I was just incredibly, really, really nervous because the baby didn't even have a heartbeat yet, and I was just terrified. And I mean, I don't smoke, but I smoke maybe 2 cigarettes a day.
Sure.
I guess
that's smoking.
Which I've been doing since
to a day.
I'm in denial.
For 2 months.
Which I've been doing since I was 14.
Oh, no. Listen. This is one of those things, though. You bring up a very good point. Let me talk about my asshole for another 20 minutes. No, this is what doctors 20. This is what doctors
do. Yes.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem in our society as a whole. When you say everything is a 10 for doctors,
right.
There's no threes. So if you say to your doctor, they go, do you smoke or don't you smoke? And you go, well, I smoke maybe 2-3 cigarettes. Okay, so you're a smoker. And you go, no, I'm not a smoker because I know guys who smoke 3 packs a day. That's 60 cigarettes a day.
There's degrees of everything.
3 cigarettes a day. You're a smoker. Let's just go ahead
and check. They might think I'm lying.
We're going to check the box that says smoker.
Right.
And again, they A, think you're lying, or B, they don't have an in-between, so they just check the box. And there's no like... So we live in a society of absolutes, which is no drinking. We all know because for thousands of years, people drank either wine or the equivalent to wine while they were pregnant, probably more so when they're pregnant. Because like I said, back in the day, if you got shot, they gave you brandy. If you got stabbed, they gave you brandy. And if you're any kind of pain at all, they gave you brandy. God knows how much brandy was given. Hell, we'd give the kids
put in the baby's
brandy.
Bottle.
Yeah, soak it.
My
soak
parents
a rag
gave me that hot toddy.
In whiskey and let the kids suck on it when it was teething. I mean,
that sounds
God
so good.
Knows how much that was. So obviously, drinking a glass of wine a night is not going to do shit. Obviously, it's not. But a bottle of wine or a case of wine may do shit. But because we're in an all-or-nothing universe now, there's no such thing as 3 cigarettes.
Absolutely.
There's a pack a day or not smoking.
My doctor said, and I've done the research on it, and of course, smoking is dose-related. So while it's not good to smoke, and I wouldn't advise smoking, 3 cigarettes is not as bad as 3 packs of cigarettes. That's obvious. And, you know, so I said to my doctor, I smoke a couple a day, and I guess I should never smoke again. I mean, I can't ever. And he said, look, he sized me up immediately. And he said, I don't want you to stress out. It would be worse for you to stress out. And he's like, if you need to smoke that one, if it's going to stress you out so much to not smoke that one cigarette a day, just smoke the one cigarette.
Wow.
And that's
wow.
how I know that he's not bullshitting
cool
about the alcohol.
Cool.
He said, alcohol is not the same. You don't know what sip of alcohol is going to affect the fetus. It's people don't
it goes
really
to the
understand
liver, right?
it. Yeah, and so he just said, just no alcohol, none.
That is, the fact that he said, go ahead and smoke a cigarette, but stay away from the booze, does suggest that he's for real.
You do feel like a real asshole, speaking of assholes, when you're sitting there pregnant, and you're just taking a drag off your husband's cigarette, because he's the same as me, he just smokes one or two. But I'm quitting, so I'm down to just a few puffs off his.
Mm-hmm.
But
work
no
on
alcohol.
This, dude. Work on this. What's it to you? It's not your kid.
Yeah, it's going to look really bad when I'm really
showing,
just sucking, dragging off a cigarette. I know it's not good.
Doc said it was cool.
But I'm doing my best.
Well, like I said, maybe generically or genetically we were inferior because of all the smoking and drinking that went on 50 years ago. But I feel like we were a stronger breed.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so we'd hurt ourselves a little bit by smoking, mom drinking or whatever. But this is the greatest generation of all the time. I mean, this is the generation that stormed Normandy, for the love of Christ. How many pussies right now who are listening to us via iPod would storm a beach in France?
Not without their Purell.
That's right. That's the goddamn point. So I don't know if we hurt them genetically by smoking or their mom smoking or whatever, but I'll tell you, it didn't hurt their character much. And maybe being the smartest, sharpest, most put together, sort of with the greatest opportunities of all genetically, maybe that doesn't have anything to do with character. Maybe character is the most important thing. I mean, maybe your IQ isn't the most important thing and your test scores isn't the most important thing.
Damn it.
Maybe there's something more to that that booze and nicotine can't affect.
Right. Yeah, the soul.
All right. The soul. So I think the booze is bad for the fetus, bad for the fetus mind, but good for the fetus soul.
Oh.
Right, either way, let's go. Let's go get
back.
Light. All right, I'm out of booze, so we got to wrap this thing up. Do you guys have anything you want to say? By the way, because we'll have you on periodically,
Brian?
But it might be a little while.
I'd love to come back. I'll bring you a bottle of wine. We'll share it.
All right.
That's
anything you want to say to the people?
Thank you for all your email messages. If you want to say hi to me, go to hibrian.com.
All right.
I think I've said enough.
You don't want to talk about your asshole for another 45? Okay.
I'm sorry this ever happened.
All right. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow. I think Damashek and Bill Simmons are going to be in as well. And as you guys continue to make this the number one podcast in America, we will grow it. I was planning on just sitting here and talking to my prepubes and a ficus plant, but I had no idea that it was going to be this popular.
This is really, really impressive and amazing.
So, yes, and it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with you guys who have picked it up and ran with it and spread it around virally and shown the man what he can do with his radio station. So God bless you. Keep the fight going. We'll keep the pirate ship sailing. And I'll see you tomorrow. And until next time, this is going to feel weird. This is Adam Carolla for Teresa Strasser and Bald Brian saying mahalo.
And that was Adam hanging out with Teresa and Brian on their first appearance on the podcast. And we still don't know the exact order, but Conspiracy Geo gave you some clues. So hopefully we'll get to the bottom of this. And if Choppy
it's important
hits up
we
Geo,
have history recorded accurately. For all these years, we could have been counting these wrong.
If Mike Choppy can confirm, just follow Geo on Twitter. He'll tweet out the real results once he gets them. Or you can
we'll
follow,
talk about it next week.
Yeah, at Giovanni Giorgio. Oh yeah, follow me at Chris Loxamana. Let us know what clips you want to hear as well. You can request clips. Email us, classics@adamcarolla.com. We're on Instagram, Facebook. We're all over the place. So find us and let us know what you want to hear.
We'll play it.
All right. So we just had the first bits and pieces of the first three episodes ever of the Adam Carolla podcast. And we're going to go a little more ahead in time. Leo Laporte, host of This Week in Tech. Adam has a lot of respect for this guy. We actually just played a clip of him suggesting Uppity for one of their movie picks earlier this week, or last week, excuse me. So a weird thing again that we had Leo Laporte, we played a clip from his show This Week in Google on the Carolla Show, but now we're going to play him talking to Adam back in 2009.
And also it's weird again because it's a Skype call and there was some sort of error on the recording side with a former producer and Adam's mic. So they had to use Leo's side of the recording after they picked up with him, which actually begins in progress. So this episode was released this way. We don't have any other version. If I had Adam's raw audio, I could actually pair it with Leo's. It would sound like they're in the same room. This is one of the better Skype calls in the history of the podcast, mostly, I guess, because of Leo's side. It's basically the whole interview until Adam's line craps out. You can hear the internet quality just start to drop. So I cut it before the last couple of questions because they're just too hard to listen to with how choppy it is. And if you want to hear them, you can go to Podcast One Premium, home of all your favorite podcasts. Entire 11 years of the Adam Carolla Show are there, and you can go through and listen to this entire episode. Until then, almost the full chat with Leo. To go over everything early in podcasting, will iTunes ever sell podcasts? Is Skype good? Oh, and one more thing. When this begins in progress, they're discussing somebody in their podcast record. They're discussing Ricky Gervais and his old podcast and his record for download numbers versus what Adam was doing this early, you know, week one, week two into the podcast. So that's who they're talking about. It sounds like it's cut abruptly, but that's how the episode was released.
Old record, but he...
Because
Yeah. He got a record of $400,000 per show, which was exactly what you're getting, $2 million
a week. Wow.
So
now when was that?
That was a couple of years ago. But they haven't updated the record, so you should call Guinness.
I don't know how that works.
There's probably some British guy comes out.
But $400,000 per show for a week or
that's
just
significant
per show.
Well, his was for a show. Now, his show was sponsored by the British newspaper, The Guardian.
Oh.
And he had huge publicity through The Guardian.
Well, is that for a 24-hour period or?
No. It's total.
Oh, because we've got a show from last week that's into the mid fives.
That's spectacular.
I guess
that's unheard of. Our biggest show, it never did more than a quarter of a million downloads.
Well, I'm
and that's considered one of the biggest shows in podcasting. So that's you should be very happy.
Well, I now I am. Now, so Leo, do you want to? I'm not exactly sure how we're going to do this. I think we're going to talk for about 20 minutes or half an hour.
Good for me. Whatever you want.
Good fit for you.
Yeah. I'm just here. Oh. I'm sitting here. I'm talking to you.
Okay.
I am recording. You can tell your tech guy I am recording your end as well as my end on separate channels.
Okay. My tech guy, Donnie, has a question from you.
Hi, Donnie.
He can't hear you, but hold on. Here he is.
I can hear him.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Donnie.
Hey, I had a question. I want to be able to listen to you and Adam while you guys are talking. And I'm wondering, is there any way? I'm not too familiar with
if
Skype.
If you go to live.twit.tv, you can hear it. It'll be a little delayed because...
That'll be fine.
But we're streaming it right now.
Live.twit.tv.
Can Adam send me video?
Yes, I think we should be able to. I think if I trigger
just
the
turn
button
on, yeah, press the camera button. Also, what website do you want me to? There we go.
That's me. And then
Donnie, you look kind of like that guy in the porn movies. What's his name?
That's what my wife says. You got a porn mustache, 70s porn mustache.
Yeah, you look like they call him the ferret or the wombat, the furry guy.
Thanks, Leo.
What website do you want me to use? Ron Jeremy, that's it.
Oh, Ron Jeremy.
Yeah. Doesn't he look like Ron Jeremy? A young Ron Jeremy. A young, attractive Ron Jeremy.
Oh, well, thank you, Lee. Website, like Adam's website?
Yeah.
Adam is adamcarolla.com.
All right. I just put that up for his lower third, that's all.
All right. I'm going to...
There you go, so everybody could see it.
And then, live.twit.tv, and I'll stream the video. I'm also recording the high-quality audio for you, so you have my end as well as...
Yeah, what we're going to do is Adam's going to read some emails, and we're going to attach your segment up front. So after he's done with you for his next podcast, he'll have some viewer...
Yeah, whatever you want. I can even sit here. I don't care. I'm not picky.
Okay. All right, I'm going to hand you back to Adam. I got Twit up live, and here's Adam. Thanks, Leo.
Oh, you're welcome.
Now, Leo, I hear you out here on KFI on Saturdays, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
But should we just call you syndicated radio show host?
Yeah, or podcaster or whatever, yeah. I don't really care.
Yeah. All right.
You can call me anything you want. Just don't call me the hedgehog.
Okay,
am I right that he looks like Ron Jeremy? Am I right?
No, but you have to be in the room. He looks more like Peter North with him.
Okay, all right.
So we'll call him the decorator.
The decorator.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's get started then.
All right.
You rolling, Donnie, by the way?
Yeah,
good. Oh. Hey, kiddies, Ace Man here with another podcast. We're going to break this one off into two parts. First, we're going to start with pioneer, podcast guru, and all-around tech guy, Leo Laporte, and then I will answer your questions, as I promised to do over the last week or so, never got around to. Leo, thank you.
Hey, Ace. Thank you.
Hey, so, Leo, I wanted to talk to you about this because I don't know anything about this technology, and you know everything about this technology.
Except that you're already getting more listeners than we've ever gotten in 5 years of doing this. So thanks a lot, Adam.
Well, you know what this is? This is the guy who brings his wife along because they need a fourth, and she's never golfed before,
and she
proceeds to clean up.
Hole in one, yeah.
Right. As soon as I start working on my swing, I'll start shanking
exactly,
the show, though.
Exactly.
Don't worry about that.
I'm counting on that.
So, Leo, I have a million questions for you, and people who are listening now have a lot of the same questions, which is, first off, Mac versus PC for you.
I'm a Mac guy, but sitting in front of me right now, I have 4 PCs and 2 Macs. So it's kind of a little bit of each.
And where do you think the future is for podcasting? I mean, what do you think in general? So, as a radio guy, as a guy who knows terrestrial radio, is familiar with satellite, and is a sort of pioneer in podcasting, where do you think we're going to be 5 years from now?
I think, to be honest, I think podcasting, the whole idea of podcasting, is going to kind of blend in with the larger idea of using the internet to distribute shows. So, in a way, saying podcasting is like saying blogging was a few years ago. It's almost diminutive. It's almost like saying, oh, you're a blogger. Oh, you're a podcaster. It's kind of less than.
Right.
But it isn't if you say, no, I do my show on the internet now. Because the internet, there's 3 billion people who can listen to you. 57% of all Americans have high-speed internet. So suddenly, you know, if you took the word internet out and you said satellite radio or, eye in the sky or whatever, people would go, oh, yeah, well, that's cool. You've got global distribution. So
Where do you think satellite radio
is? Well, satellite's history, right, Adam? Satellite's history.
I don't want to be one of these guys that just sounds like a spoiled ass and says, yeah, it's going to be history because I'm not on it. But it seems
I'm on XM and I'm saying it's history.
Oh, okay, good. It seems like the internet is going to usurp this.
Yeah.
We don't need satellite if we have the internet, right?
Exactly. The internet usurps everything. It's kind of the do-it-all distribution medium. And what's good about it, and the thing that makes it most interesting, is that everybody has access to it. You know, Adam, you had to fight hard to become a show host. I don't know what your early days of radio were like, but, I'm sure it was tough to claw your way up. It was for me, because you had to convince some guy who had a big antenna and a big transmitter to let you use his microphone. You don't need to do
anymore. That sounded so gay. This guy's got a huge antenna, an even bigger microphone, and he wants you to blow into that. And you got to convince this guy that you got to talk right into that mic.
It is kind of gay.
Well, Leo, first off, Leo was telling me sort of off the air, if there is an off the air
Not
anymore,
for me. Everything I do is on the air now.
That the current record holder for podcast downloads is Ricky Gervais with
400,000.
I'm sorry, 400,000. And I'm here to tell you that the one we did with Dave Damashek last week has cracked, I think, about 550.
Wow.
And that's not in a day, right? That's just because this thing's 5 days old.
Yeah, no. In fact, one of the things you find out with podcasts is people still download them months from now. It's not like what you're doing is any less funny in 6 months.
Right, or was funny to begin with. So we should talk to the good people from Guinness and try to get us in there. And I'm guessing, I don't know when he set this record, but it couldn't have been in the 60s, right?
No, it was a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay. Well, very interesting. The other question I want to ask, and I have a laundry list of these things. How about monetizing? Has anyone really figured out a way to make money off of these podcasts?
Yeah, we make pretty good buck. The key is advertising, right? Ricky was so happy that he got 400,000 downloads on his free podcast. He made a big mistake. He said, oh, well, now we'll charge for it. And everybody stopped listening to it. It was like, nobody's going to pay for that. So,
what did he charge?
Oh, it was cheap. It was like $1.99 a show or something. It was not a lot of money. The problem is it's hard enough to get a podcast. People feel like they've worked so hard to get the podcast, to ask them for money is insult to injury. They got to figure out where it is. They got to download. They got to put it on something. They got to find that thing. They got to listen to it. It's so much harder than just pushing a button on your radio.
So your take on the part where you monetize this thing is not through subscriptions, but through advertisements.
I think it's the only way. People are used to free radio. We're just, you know, another way of distributing free radio.
But you yourself are on satellite, and people spend money for that.
Well, that's you and I just kind of concluded. That's not kind of,
I guess
not a long-term proposition there.
Well, they didn't give every penny to Howard Stern.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. So you're saying advertisements. And now, as far as advertisers go, how much input do they have? I mean, I guess in a certain way, aren't you worried about running into the old school? Eventually, you're going to get a program director. Eventually, there's going to be a guy telling you what you can and can't say because Pepsi or Quiznos is going to pull out.
That's why I'm doing this. I'm doing this. You know, it's every dream of a DJ to own their own station, right? They just want to do it without interference.
Right.
So this is what this lets you do. So
what about advertising?
Well, I'm not going to let them tell me what to do. If you produce results for an advertiser, they don't get to say what I'm going to do.
I know, but, you know, they don't get to say what you do on TV either. On the other hand, if you drop – well, I'm not even going to say – if you say fuck, then you're going to lose your McDonald's.
Well, you're right. Fortunately, my programming, we don't say fuck. We have
what the fuck?
I do technology-oriented content, right? So the advertisers – know what they're buying. You're absolutely right. It's harder to sell. Look at MySpace. It's been very hard for them to sell ads because advertisers go, well, we don't know what kind of environment our ads are going to be in. YouTube, same thing. But YouTube has been able to sell ads on known brands like Monty Python because they know what's going to be there, you know? And so the advertisers say, oh, well, we know them. So you're right. You have to provide an environment that advertisers are comfortable with. And we've worked really hard on my podcasts to get them comfortable with it. But the truth is, you know, we deliver this kind of niche, dedicated niche audience that these guys are dying to talk to. We're a lot cheaper than mainstream media. So in a downtime like this, where every dollar counts, these advertisers are actually fleeing satellite, television, radio, and going to specialty stuff because it's cheaper and it's more targeted. So we're actually doing better than ever.
Here's what I was saying, Leo. I was saying old school advertising is sort of like putting up a billboard and having thousands of people drive past the billboard. But what percentage of those people in Los Angeles even speak English?
Yeah, exactly.
Number one.
But by the way, you pay for everybody who goes by, English or not, when you buy that billboard.
Number two, one are interested in the latest Dane Cook rom-com. Number three are going to the movies this weekend. I mean, their batting average has to be horrific because it must be every 10 million cars that pass by that billboard, one person goes to see that movie.
Right.
In your situation, what you're saying is, look, we don't have 10 million cars driving past us. We have a couple hundred thousand cars, but they're motivated.
Precisely. The word that advertising community uses these days is engaged. So the so the difference is instead of buying millions of loosely engaged viewers, you know, people who watch The Man Show, they were coming and going, they were getting a beer, they were watching it. In fact, probably The Man Show had a much more engaged audience, let's say, than Seinfeld. You know, people were more dedicated to seeing it, but we're taking it to the next degree even more, where they don't get up and get a beer. They're really engaged in the content. They feel like they're a part of it. And so an ad is like a friend saying to them, you know, and we're very careful. We only pick products we use that we can recommend. We do the Paul Harvey thing where we say, I love Bose Radio and you will too. And so it's very much of a kind of a recommendation. And that's very powerful. I don't say it like that, but.
No, I understand. Good day.
Good day.
Yeah, Paul Harvey, a radio pioneer, would probably roll over in his grave if he heard us talking about podcasting and doing a bad imitation of him.
Do you think his last words were good?
Do you think – so basically what we're going from is – putting flyers on the windshield of every car in the parking lot or using skywriting. Remember when skywriting used to be a viable form of advertising?
They still is. Or you ever go to a ball game, they fly a banner over the top of the ball game.
They do the banners. Yeah. It's actually – I don't know what happened to skywriting, because I feel like when I was a kid, every third or fourth day I'd leave my house and look up at the sky, and there'd be a big thing that says Sheila, Hart, Mark, or something, or someone would propose via skywriting. Yeah. The skywriting business must really be taking a hit. Maybe it's all the terrorist activity that have thinned these guys out or something. But remember when skywriting was a big deal? My kids, they see contrails now, but they don't see sky riding. And then remember when you would get to the sky riding a couple hours too late and you'd have to sit there and go, I think that, I know.
That G's
sure
drifted.
That's a G's drifted. His name is Duke. I know his name is Duke. Duke's in love with somebody. I don't think it's another dude. Remember you'd see the blown out sky riding?
It was
is
a sky different
riding
time.
Illegal?
It's a different
it was
time.
A simpler.
A simpler.
It was a simpler time.
Yeah.
So instead of doing the sky riding or banner over the stadium thing, we're now going to use marksmen when it comes
snipers.
To our advertising.
It's sniper-based right? advertising, exactly. 50 caliber right. bullets right to the brain.
And if you're a Leo Laporte fan and Leo Laporte is writing a book and you're talking about it on your show, then your batting average is going to be much higher than you going on the Tonight Show and talking about your book.
Well, that's it.
Not that Che would ever have you. He's a dear friend. But
no, that's an interesting point. I've done Regis and Kelly over a dozen times and not one blip.
Your dick must be sore.
I tell you, not together. I did one
on
at a time.
Internet.
Yeah, one at a time.
Yeah. You've done Regis and Kelly, right? Sorry.
No blip. I've done the Today Show, CNN. I've not done Leno, but you know, obviously, I'm not going to ever do Leno. But those shows do not get you much benefit. I have to say, you know, I've written 13 books, Adam, and we would go on the. I would go on those shows to try to sell the books. It made the publisher happy, but it never sold books. It never sold books.
Right.
You sell books by talking to the people who are in the market for that book and saying, you know, hey, here's a great book.
No, Leo, I have gone on The Tonight Show and plugged my movie and not seen much movement, and then gone on Bill Simmons' podcast
Perfect.
From ESPN and plugged my movie and seen it hop onto the Amazon top 10 list.
There you go.
So
perfect.
That's a specific crowd. Obviously, Leno has a much larger crowd, but this is a much more motivated crowd.
They're loosely engaged. They're barely watching. And I
no.
You know, they're watching through 2 feet. They're not seeing
What Leo, sorry for cutting you off, but I'm curious, like, so there's a lot of people that are listening who think, "Hey, I could do this," or "I'd like to try to do this." How do you get started doing a podcast? What's a way to do it on the cheap?
They always said that one of the successes, the key to the success of Bing Crosby was that every guy thought he could sing as well as Bing Crosby. The truth is they couldn't, but they thought they could. It's very easy to make a podcast. What do you have? You have a computer. You have a headset microphone. You have internet access. You could, you know, the bandwidth for downloading it. I mean, look, somebody downloads 400,000 copies of your show. That's a lot of download. You go through CashFly, but you can also go to, if you're a smaller podcast, somebody like, there's a company called Libsyn.com, that will let you do it for $30 a month instead of, you know, thousands of bucks a month. So the cost is very low. The real key is, well, how do I get people to listen to this thing? And
how do you?
Well, you got to build a community around yourself. You know, if you're Adam Carolla, it's an easy thing to do because you're Adam Carolla. You come out of the box with a built-in audience. If you know,
no, I realize that. Yeah.
If you're Joe Schmo down the street, you have to. It comes down finally to what it always comes down to: making good content. The truth is, I think there's a scarcity of good content, whether it's funny or informative or whatever. There's a scarcity of it. There's a scarcity of it on TV. There's a scarcity of it in movie theaters. If you make something really great, people will find it. You just have to continue to do it and plug away at it, you know?
I was being interviewed by Joel Stein yesterday from the Los Angeles Times, and I said, you know, the thing I think is interesting about the time we're living in is if you have a computer and a microphone and the wherewithal to do this, and it doesn't take much – if you were so good that people couldn't ignore you, if we somehow Richard Pryor at age 35 and combined him with George Carlin at age 45. And he just sat there and did 1 hour of blistering, funny as hell commentary, social commentary, and just was so unbelievably good that he scorched a microphone. People would share it, and it would catch on, and you would have an audience.
Exactly.
That's how it would work?
Yeah, the difference is that it used to be there was a monopoly of distribution, that if you didn't get Universal or NBC or Paramount to distribute your stuff, no one would ever hear it. So you could be that brilliant comic in some tiny club somewhere. Nobody might ever find you. Nowadays, you can distribute it. You can get it out there. And it's my opinion that that's better. You know, there's no monopoly.
Speaking of distribution, now iTunes, as you generously brought up, our show's number one on iTunes in the podcast department. But they don't charge and they don't sell iTunes, and they don't sell podcasts. They sell songs. Do you ever envision a time when they do sell the things that are on their site other than the songs?
Possibly. I mean, you know, part of the deal, one of the reasons Apple doesn't like to do that is they don't want onesie twosie contracts with everybody. So if you're an independent artist, you can go to CD Baby, right, and then do a deal with CD Baby, and then you can be on iTunes. I presume someday that might happen with podcasts. But remember, you know, what happened to Ricky Gervais? Here he has the most, you know, listened to podcast in the world. He goes to audible.com, tries to sell it, and within a month or two, he gave up because nobody bought it. People are used to free radio. They're not going to pay for this stuff.
He literally went from 400,000 to 4,000 or something.
Well, we don't know, but I don't think it was very successful because he stopped right away.
And what about Skype? What do you think of that?
Skype's fantastic. We're using it right now, right?
So I think we are, yeah.
Skype's free. It's I couldn't do my network without Skype because I live in Podunk Town in Northern California. I couldn't get people to come up there. Nevertheless, I get people on because of Skype.
Now, you can do Skype and have people call in real time to your program.
Yep, that's what we're doing right now. We're broadcasting. This will be a podcast for you. I'm broadcasting this live right now.
Oh, well, sorry for saying fuck.
Oh, fuck it. You know, so, there's actually a debate in the chat room because we don't let him say fuck in the chat room. And there's a guy saying, you got a double standard because Leo can say fuck, but I can't say fuck. That's a double standard. So I said, yes, exactly. It's a double. Yeah, well, that's what we call a double standard.
Well, I know.
Got a problem with it?
Well, start podcasting and complain about Leo. That's what you could do.
Exactly.
All right, Leo, do you have any questions for me, by the way?
Where do you get your hair done? Because it's just gorgeous.
Thank you. I do it myself. It's a mixture of pomade and just simple brewer's yeast.
Did you and Dr. Drew ever have a falling out, or is it just that, you know, you went separate ways? What happened there?
Oh, you want to know the real story behind me and Dr. Drew?
Yeah, you can tell it now.
What happened with me and Dr. Drew, I'll tell you how, I've never been more pissed in my life. Now, I eventually left Loveline to start doing morning radio and have worked my way up to your podcast. So things are going great for me.
Congratulations on the career trajectory. It's fantastic.
God knows where I'll be a year from now. But I did Loveline.
What happened to that Jimmy Kimmel guy? Did anything ever happen to him? Is he working?
Jimmy who?
I don't know.
Fallon? He just started. He's funny as hell.
Fallon's good. I like Fallon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's like a skinny, funny Jimmy Kimmel. Is that it? it's like if chicks liked Jimmy Kimmel. And he was funny. So I did Loveline for like 10 years. And then I went off to go do my morning program for about 3 years or so. But Drew and I only had a couple of big blowouts. One is... And you tell me, and this is why terrestrial radio can kiss my ass. When I was over doing over at K-Rock, at a certain point after 9 years, it had always been what they call favored nations. For those of you who don't know the lingo, it just means if Leo and I were going to do a show together, whatever the price was, Leo and I would both get the same price.
Right.
It doesn't work out well when one guy's getting 10 times as much as
no,
the other guy.
Bad idea.
They're doing the same amount of
yeah,
work.
Yeah.
So it was always favored nations. at a certain point, at the very end of our run over there, they said to me, we're going to offer you one third of what you've been making over the last 9 years, but we're going to offer Drew exactly the same what he's get paying. So essentially, he'll get paid three times as much as you to do a job where you talk 85% of the time. Now, I don't know what their plan was, and I really, to this day, I don't know if they're trying to drive me out of there, piss me off, get me to quit. I don't know what it was, but I said to Drew, we got to make a plan here, buddy, because we got to stay together on this one. And he immediately just signed his contract.
Oh.
And I said, Drew, you know how much money I've made you over the last 10 years with the college tours and Loveline on MTV and all the crap we've done? You know how much money you'd be making right now if you stuck with The Poor Man or Ricky Rackman? How about it, buddy? And so he pissed me off, and I was stewing. Like, so I would go to work every day knowing that the guy next to me was getting paid three times as much as me, and I was doing all the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And then on top of the whole thing, he started going out of town doing like engagements and lectures and things like that. And when the way Loveline worked is if I couldn't make it, if I was sick and couldn't make it, they'd run a best of show. If he couldn't make it because he was making money doing something else, I would have to show up, do the show with a substitute doctor.
Well, that tells you who's the valuable there.
No shit, Sherlock. Yeah, yeah. So he's out doing his thing, and he's actually making money, and a band comes in. I think it was like Linkin Park or something, and it was right around the Katrina event. And they said, look, we're raising money, and we're going to put you on the spot, Mr. Radio Hotshot, Mr. Big Time, you know, cable and radio TV star. How much can we put you down for? And I said, put me down for $4,000. So I said, fine. Now, Drew, ironically, was making $4,000 or more away from the studio that night doing some lecture to the guys over at Upjohn or wherever he was. So they put me down for the money. And then the following day, when Drew came back, we were doing a competition where we said, who wants to come in and sit in on Loveline? And the highest bidder, all the money's going to Katrina, but the highest bidder can sit in with us. Well, we had a guy bid $15,000. We had two guys bid $15,000, which I was blown away by. And I said to Drew at that time, listen, buddy, you're not getting away scot-free. You're making three times as much money as I am. You were gone making more money the night I was put on the spot by Linkin Park. I'm out $4,000. I know you're too cheap to give $4,000, but you better fork over something because I'm feeling pretty pissed about now. And he was like, yeah, yeah. And the days would turn into weeks, and it kept going on, and he kept like, I don't know. And finally, we had the guy who donated the $15,000. He was an astrophysicist from Harvard who later named a meteor after me.
Wow.
Which I thought is, that's awesome until it hits the space station, right? And then Corolla destroys space station. But there's a fiery ball with my name on it in space. But this guy then came in and it was like, Tom, you gave $15,000. God bless you. And then I turned to Drew and I said, oh, Drew, by the way, what did you ever give any money away? And he said, no, I never did. And I said, why not, Drew? Why not? And he said, you don't know where that money's going.
Oh.
And I said, really? You got a guy right here that gave $15,000. I gave, between us, we're giving $20,000. You don't know where that money's going. Nope.
Oh,
don't know.
That's undercutting you guys.
He's making three times as much as me at the time. I wanted to choke the life out of him, but he's still there. The ratings suck, and I'm gone. What can you say? And I still consider him a dear friend, although I don't know why. I mean, it's sort of like Rihanna's going to get back with Chris Brown, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because you like getting hit in the eye. It's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I like getting punched by Dr. Drew.
Yeah, he cut you off the legs on that one. That's cold.
Jeez,
that's harsh.
Christ.
It's one thing not to give money. Another thing to say, yeah, and you just wasted yours, and nobody else should give any money. You know, because this is a bad idea. That's terrible.
The guy gave $15,000. It is exactly what he got paid to pay what to teach one summer session of astrophysics.
That's a whole
at
summer.
Harvard.
Wow.
He gave it all to Katrina Relief just to come meet Dr. Drew and have Dr. Drew spit in his eye. It was awesome. Yeah. And then and I yelled at Drew. I said, on the air. He did this on the air. I said, Drew, are you high? This guy just gave $15,000. No, you can't say that. A week later, we had the second guy who paid $15,000. I brought it up again on the air. He said exactly the same thing. And I thought, how dumb can you be and be a doctor?
Well, you
so
proved
that's
the point.
My,
I guess I touched a nerve with that one, Adam. I think.
yeah. There's a lot of nerves. I got a lot of nerves, Leo. But we're good friends today. So I guess
there
the fact
go.
I just got it out is good. All right. Hold on. My stupid buddy Donnie's wanting me to ask Apple versus PC and which one's easier. You know, it's
you
gonna
already
be
that
Apple.
Was like the first thing you asked me. Does Donnie
have
he's like a broken record.
He smoked. No, he's like a broken bong is what he is.
Oh,
not
I get
like
it.
A broken record.
I would right, say I like Apple. Get a Macintosh, Donnie. It's easier right, to use if you're high.
What's a good program if you're building a web page?
Boy, that's kind of a more complicated question. You have a web page, right, Adam? You have adamcarolla.com, right?
Yeah, but I didn't build it, so I don't know.
Are you going to build a web page? Is this for you that you're asking this question?
No, nothing's for me. It's like when I say, what's a reasonably priced entry-level car that gets 40 miles to the gallon? I'm driving an Aston Martin.
You give and you give, you know? People don't give you enough credit.
I ask for the little people, Leo.
You give so much of yourself, Adam. You're like Jerry Lewis. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
The hair, too. So I would say if you're going to do a website, it looks like I'm looking at your site. It looks like you use you're using WordPress or something like that on there, which is a good choice. Yeah, you got WordPress. So WordPress.com is a great place for people to go, or Blogger.com. If they really don't, you know, they don't want to pay for it. They just want to get some stuff up on the web. Your site's a little plain. I'm gonna say it's a little simple.
Yeah. I told him not to gussy it up too much, that we're going sort of pirate renegade.
I like that. It's functional. Here. It's functional.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, it's an interesting question, and again, I'm a newbie to this whole podcast world, but you know, we were talking about growing the show, and we were talking about, you know, some bells and some whistles and getting a theme song and making it into a show. And then I sort of thought to myself, maybe the reason people like this format is it's not that.
I think
maybe
you're right.
They don't want that.
I think you're right. I think in a lot of ways we do this, the music at the beginning and kind of more professional kind of thing. But that was because we were trying to counter that impression that we weren't, you know, that we were amateurs. You, it's the other way around. It's Adam Unplugged. It's
right,
get rid of all the, you know, the blow-dried stage scripted stuff, and let's see. Of course, your show's always been like that. It's not like, but I think
right.
People are so sick of that whole, you know, you watch CNN and it's just there's nobody home. It's like empty eyes, like shark eyes. There's nobody there.
Well, I mean, it's like I watch CNN in the morning. I see them do interviews with terrorist experts that last 18 seconds.
Yeah. There's no substance.
There's nothing there. And by the way, during those 18 seconds, there's four crawls moving along the underside of the screen. I mean, I know everyone has a short attention span, but I think this sort of ADD culture is kicking the crap out of us.
Television thinks, you know this, television thinks everybody's stupid.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. Well, stupid and sort of half deaf and half blind.
Yeah.
Like cataracts, uses a tin horn.
What?
Won't
hey?
Get
a, hey?
What did get you a joke unless yeah. it's teed yeah. up and you're hit over the head with it with a paddle. So maybe this is the counter to that. And you know what, Leo? It's interesting because back to my arch nemesis, Dr. Drew, when he and I used to go out and do college tours, we would go to anyone who would have us. And we would go to some of these state schools, and we would go to like you know, Northern DeKalb University, where – if you sign your name on your SATs and have a GED, you're in. And we would go to places like Brown and Stanford and places that were obviously much more difficult academically. And I noticed after doing 100 colleges, I noticed that the lower the academics, the easier it was to get in, essentially the dumber the student body, the faster they would get fidgety.
Yeah.
If Dr. Drew spoke for more than 45 or 50 seconds at a time without me tossing in a dick joke, the entire auditorium of 3,000 or 4,000 kids at the crappy school, you could feel them squirming and rolling and sort of getting uncomfortable. Just that general, believe me, when you're on a stage in front of 4,000 people and they're all collectively getting bored at the same time, well, Leo, I don't have to tell you what sound is
like. Oh, you know. Yeah.
Yes, you know. You've been there many, many times.
Well, I pretty much my life right there. That's it.
Right.
I could feel the people. I could feel the people
exactly
tuning out. No, I think you're right. Now, the question is, did mass media teach us that short attention span, or are they doing it in response to our short attention span? Which came first?
I think it's I think they both feed each other. I think there's an impulse. I think people like greasy food, so a fast food place opens on a corner,
right,
and then more greasy food is consumed, and then another McDonald's opens, and it becomes a negative cycle.
Yeah, no,
so
that's right.
Obviously, there needs to be a kernel of I like bacon melted onto everything I eat. Otherwise, the place would go out of business.
Right.
But there is a way, I believe, to say, look, here's a healthy alternative, and we never did that as a society. We just said, what do the people want? They want more bacon, and they want more biscuits, and they want more grease, and by God, we're going to give it to them. So I noticed, speaking to students that were not so high up the academic food chain, that their ability to listen was decreased quite a bit from the better students and the better academic institutions. And so the folks need the bell. The dumber you are, the more bells and whistles you need, and the smarter you are, the less you need. Your voice alone is stimulating enough.
I think that, I always came from, and we were told, when we did Tech TV, we said, never say educational. Cable companies will never pick it up if it's educational. But I always made the assumption that our audience was intelligent, and they wanted to be treated as intelligent adults and to give them some content. Yeah, maybe dress it up, make it entertaining, make it interesting. But ultimately, people, I think humans are learning machines. And if you give them a chance, they want to learn. They want to get better.
I agree. And I really do think most adults are sort of like troubled teens, and that, maybe they come from a broken neighborhood and they come from the wrong side of the tracks, and it could easily be swayed to join a gang, or you could start an after school program and they could learn computers and play basketball in the nighttime park league and stay out of trouble. The same kid could go down gangbanger route or could go down the vocational learning route. The same kid, it's just us as a society. And to me, radio and TV especially has said, come join our gang of idiots.
Yeah. So you think now this is the crux of it. You think media has a responsibility?
I think, that's a very interesting question. I think anyone who does anything creative has a responsibility to themselves, not really to the kid who they may influence to go the wrong direction, but has a responsibility to themselves, which is, I'm going to attempt to say something or create something. I don't want to just crank out some crap that is going to move the most units.
Now, Adam, I got to point out, you did the man show. This had girls jumping on trampolines.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, the man show, here's where the man show, how the man show was born. Jimmy It's raping me in the shower. And I,
that's all we really need to know right there.
It tells me not to say it that way. Oh, all right, not the other way. Jimmy went out with someone like Ellen Kay or some other, you know, morning show female, you know, peroxide blonde type. And they wanted to do a kind of good morning Glendale. You know, he said, she said, and he was driving home from this very crappy interview. And he said, Adam, I they want women to like me, and my wife doesn't even like me. There's no way. He turned out to be a prophet, by the way, when it came to that call, because they've been poor for a couple of years now. But the point is I said, you're right. Your wife doesn't even like you. He said, we need to do our own show, and we got to make it all the stuff we think is, and we do our own thing. And we got to, you know, keep it real, as it were. No more this. He said, you said, Pat. We got together and we started doing the Man Show. And when it came time to sort of show it to the network or talk with the network, they said, but what about the female perspective? Where's the female voice? And we said, no, no, no. That's the point. It's our show. It's a show for guys. It's a show we want to do. And yeah, it turned out to be really successful based on the fact that the network didn't get in and water it down.
Yeah.
And
but you're saying it was tongue in cheek. It was comedy. You weren't trying to save the world.
No, no. I mean, look. You know, there's great stuff. I mean, there's art or commentary or literature that's really important, and there's stuff that just puts a smile on your face. I'm not judging. I don't think that, you know, being George Carlin is any more noble than doing prop humor if the prop humor's done to the best of the ability of the guy who's doing the prop humor. It's just when the guy who's doing the prop humor says, I'm going to talk to the man and find out how we can get the most people in here, and I'll pull out of the trunk what they want me to pull out of the trunk.
There's the mistake.
That's the trouble.
So you're saying artistic integrity trumps everything.
I think the minute you start thinking, what do other people want to hear, as opposed to what do I have to say, you're screwing up the artistic process.
Yeah.
It's no longer – it's been usurped now. It's like if you're painting a painting and you say, I'm going to take a quick poll and find out what people want me to paint versus I paint Mona Lisa or this bowl of fruit. The second you start asking people in the village what painting you'd like to see them paint – then the whole chain is interrupted. The whole process is screwed up.
No, I'm with you. I mean, that's any creative person has to come from the heart. And the minute you chase ratings or money, you're going to lose your soul, and you're going to lose your talent, and probably you're going to lose your audience at the same time. I'm with you 100% on that.
And that was Leah Laporte talking to Adam through Skype, which always works for Adam. So glad we got to hear some of that back in 2009. See Adam in person. He'll be in Cleveland at Hilarities February 27th. He'll also be in Indianapolis February 28th and 29th at the Helium. So what? That's in about a week, maybe even less than a week if we're looking at Cleveland. So come out, see Adam in person. You won't have to Skype with him. Nothing can go wrong. Speaking of things that can't go wrong, Andy Dick came to the studio in 2009.
This is from the house, actually.
Oh, yeah, that's right, when he was at the house. That's right.
This is kind of the reason why nobody got to record the house anymore shortly after this. Adam Carolla Show 18 featuring Andy Dick, recorded March 17th, 2009, released on the 18th. This was the day and date thing they were doing. It was great. And Andy comes in. He's got a head full of steam, newly sober, coffee, and cigars. He asks Adam, can I smoke a cigar? Adam says no. And then he goes, you know what? Yeah, you can. And he quickly lets him do it. And that results in a cigar being left behind in the office, making the place smell like cigars forever until they found that and got rid of the smell finally. But this led to no more guests at the house, basically, because of this interview. And then when he came back to the episode at the shop, he made sure to make an even bigger mess. It's very good. If you want to check out the rest of this episode, Podcast One Premium. Until then, Adam Carolla Show 18, featuring Andy Dick.
Get it on, everybody. God bless you, by the way. Seth MacFarlane yesterday, I think, broke the record. We don't have our numbers in yet, but it's going to clear
500,000 hits quite easily. So nice work, everyone. Keep spreading the message. And a man who may break Seth MacFarlane's record, but probably not, Andy Dick, everybody. I love me some Andy Dick.
Why would you start the show like that?
Yeah, you're right.
You're trying to...
It was a feeble attempt at humor, that's all
it
was.
No, you're trying to get me to break the record. How am I supposed to do that?
Your fan base, your popularity.
Well, there's nothing I can do.
You're beloved.
I can't yell it from the mountaintops. I don't know.
Andy, let me congratulate you on sobriety.
Thank you.
And I do always explain when anyone talks about, you know, the former Andy Dick and how out of control he was and how high he was and how everything under the sun he was, I would always stop them and say, it's true, but he is really talented. Like, he's a really funny guy.
Thank you.
He's not just an out-of-control, slow-motion train wreck. And, A, what's it like to be creative, sober, for a change? And then, nice. B, how do you sort of prove that to Hollywood?
Good questions, Mr. Kroll. Good
yeah.
questions. Well, A, it's always better sober, always. I'm better. I feel better. I'm far more creative. In fact, I have to be creative when I'm sober. Otherwise, I think that's one of the reasons I would drink, just plain boredom. It sounds
so. It's like if
an excuse, but if I'm bored, I'll drink, and then I can just watch a faucet drip.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. No, I know what you're saying. There's that sort of thing where you have this sort of creative mind that's going 1,000 miles an hour yep. all the mm-hmm. time, mm-hmm. and you can't really enjoy anything because you're always having to scratch out a note, or it reminds mm-hmm. you of an idea for mm-hmm. a documentary that you wanted to work on, or so on and so forth.
The
booze true. And the drugs just throw a wet blanket over the whole thing and says, now you can go ahead and watch reruns of Mr. Belvedere for 4 hours, and you'll not think about anything.
You're exactly right about all of it.
And yes. So
it quells all of the creative mind. It puts it to sleep. I could literally, but my show is Cheaters, and it still is. Mm-hmm. Although in sobriety, I haven't been able to, because I do get caught up doing these creative things.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm wondering, I'll get back to Cheaters in a second.
Oh, I love Cheaters.
Why that's not the number one show
oh, you
in
agree?
The world.
You
I
agree.
Have no, oh, yes.
Oh. Can I get a plug right now to Joey Greco? Because I did these little internet shows that I'll tell you about, because I went in and I pitched this as a TV show mm-hmm. to Comedy Central. They said, okay, that's cute, Andy. Go play on our little playground called the internet. They have an
right.
internet thing, adam.com. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, really? Okay, whatever. So I went, I made them for the internet, and it's called House Arrest with Andy Dick,
mm-hmm.
because people think this alcohol monitoring ankle bracelet is a house arrest
Ooh.
Ankle bracelet. It's not.
Write that down.
Yeah, it's not. But since they think it is, I went with it, and I have the show. That might cause some interference, because every 20 minutes it buzzes. It literally might. But
well, that'll be funny interference as opposed to annoying cell
yeah.
phone interference.
Well, so anyways, my first guest, it was Joey Greco. So you can
He's
go
the
on
guy
Adam.
Who hosts
Cheaters.
Cheaters.
Yeah. He's on adam.com. You can see that.
Yeah. Episode. Well, so back to one thing, because mm-hmm. I feel like we'll be all over the place.
We're going
to
be.
I think the fast brain like you have, or yeah. the brain that can't shut down, or as Dr. Drew always says, the sort of ADD hypervigilance brain
right.
needs its booze. It needs
right.
to be knocked down. Mm-hmm. But I also think the super slow, I'm from Alaska and I work at a logging camp
right.
brain.
Mm-hmm.
I think that brain needs its booze too.
Yeah.
I think it's the in-between brain that doesn't need the drugs
doesn't
and the booze.
Anything.
Like
yeah.
they're the ones that are like super slowed down mm-hmm. and they're almost reptilian
yeah.
and it's
yeah.
like they need to catch a buzz.
Yeah.
And then there's the crazy mad genius brains
yeah.
and they need to catch a buzz.
Yeah.
And then there's a guy who drives the Taurus wagon and he doesn't need to catch
doesn't
a buzz.
Need anything.
Maybe he's just where everyone should be
mm-hmm.
and you're at the upper end of the spectrum. And my buddy Vince from high school, who's working over at the Anawalt Lumber in North Hollywood, is at the lower end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
But either way, you two need to catch a buzz.
Yeah, we do. But who knows? Maybe your guy Vince, or whatever his name is that you just said, maybe he is. Maybe he's got that mind too.
No.
It just happens to be working over there.
No, I don't. I don't think so.
Well,
I don't think so, because
him,
when we were,
I don't know.
No, I love Vince, but when Vince and I were captains for a game. A high school football game, we went out to the 50-yard line to meet the other captains from the other team, and the ref did that thing where he said, all right, I'm going to throw the coin up in the air. I'm going to catch the coin, and you call it. And he pointed to Vince. He said, you call it in the air. And he threw the coin up, and he caught the coin in his hand like this, and he held it covered. Yeah. And in the air, Vince said, tails. And the guy opened his hand and in his palm, and it was heads. And Vince said, I thought you were going to go like that. He actually had somehow fact. Now, I don't know if that was a diabolical joke or he actually had factored in the thought the guy would flip his hand over. Yeah. But you can't factor that into the actual flip. And that, it's not.
That doesn't say that he's retarded. All right.
Let's not focus on Vince. Let's focus on Andy. How many days of sobriety?
7.5 months.
Oh, well,
it's almost 8 months. Uh-huh. I'm not counting the days, although I probably should.
And longest and run since?
2.5 years.
In 2.5 years.
No. My longest run was 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. That was during the Andy Dick Show.
And what knocked you out of that?
Yeah, I'm not a victim type. I'm not, you know, I just wanted to drink. It just buzzed. My ankle just buzzed, by the way, so there was no interference.
Oh, really?
When the Andy Dick Show got canceled, I said, yeah, they ain't buying what I'm selling. I'm going into semi-retirement.
And you started drinking.
I started drinking casually, and then it just got heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier. And I kept lightening up the load. I stopped doing hard liquor. I stopped even smoking pot. And by the very end, I was only drinking beer for the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little pot here and there, but mostly just exorbitant amounts of beer.
And that was enough.
That was enough to... Just, I had the liquid. What? By the way, can we swear on this?
Yeah, go ahead.
We can.
And I got to know about your ankle. How does the ankle alcohol ankle bracelet work?
The liquid shits is what I wanted to say.
How does that work?
It monitors the level of alcohol you have in your system through your perspiration.
Really?
Uh-huh.
And so if, in fact, you had one beer right now, it
would... If, in fact, I walked in here and you all, you know, there's like four people in this room right now. If I walked in here and you all each had a beer or you had a few, it would probably go off. It would say there was minuscule amounts of alcohol.
Dr. Drew,
my beer right now.
You can have it. You can drink it. It's no big deal.
Dr. Drew would feel it in his balls. There'd be a vibrating in Dr. Drew's balls if that happened. Or
it's
who,
not
who's
connected.
An alert?
It alerts a middleman. This is a company. I have to pay for this. So I'm renting this ankle thing.
I love that.
It's a middleman.
I know.
And then they would alert. They have to report it to the courts. Mm-hmm. They report the days. Every day there is a,
Now
I have to be by my bed in the middle of the night. A modem is connected next to my bed. And then this connects in the middle of the night when I'm sleeping to the modem. And the modem sends the day's results back to the middleman.
And I'm just picturing a founding father in on this conversation. Do you know what I mean?
Founding. Oh, the guy who's like, here's what we'll do.
I mean like Ben Franklin. So when one imbibes ale, it alerts a second party? And what purpose does this serve? I mean, how bizarre would it be having this fucking conversation with a founding father?
It wouldn't happen. But you know what? Back in the day, by the way, and you know that the pilgrims brought over, when they came over on their boats and their ships, they didn't have water on board. Did you know that?
It was just all booze?
All beer. Because it kept longer than water.
But by the way, like if I was going to set sail for like a 9-month journey, who's got the beer? That would come up like 1,400 times.
Oh, and guess what?
We set sail.
Yeah, and guess what? They turned around a month into the journey or something like that to go back because they ran out of beer quickly. They went back and got more beer.
Well, I mean, seriously,
I'm dead serious about that.
Well, I mean, if you think about it now, we have air conditioning, cable TV, and chicks that wax their bushes, and we still need to be drunk half the day. Could you imagine?
It's the same.
Could you imagine back then when, you know, you're eating food with maggots in it, you know, three of your sons have died of cholera. I mean, your wife's got a bush the size of the shrub from The Shining. Can you imagine how loaded you would have to be?
From The Shining, you mean The Maze?
Yeah, Jack. The one Jack Nicholson was running through.
Through.
Running through your wife's vagina. You have seven sons, but four of them have died. And you, by the way, when they die back then, you would put them in the ground. You would literally have to go put them in the ground. How drunk would you have to be?
Just all the time. But my point was going to be that back then, beer was this sounds crazy, but it was organic. It was alive. They didn't pasteurize it.
Right.
It was actually given to kids.
Cold filtered.
It was nutritious, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, listen,
it was a meal. Yes,
booze. By the way, I mean,
it's not anymore.
Every tonic had some booze in it because who's not going to take a swig of something that's got booze in it and not feel just a little bit better? I mean, whether you got a toothache or whether your ass hurts, you take a shot. It's the NyQuil effect.
You don't worry. You're not like tempting me. Look, you can't drive down Sunset Boulevard or anywhere or turn the TV on without seeing an ad for booze or, you know, a dewy cold glass of beer. It's all over the place.
Well, what as far as
let alone I dream about it at night. Oh, I like it. I always have. I always will. And I'm not saying there's going to be a day that I don't drink again. Who knows? I can't say never, and I can't say forever. I can't say those two words ever.
Do you black out when you drink?
I just say ever.
Do you black out when you drink?
I mean, not every time,
but of course I do. What you're doing or where you are?
Not every time, but yes, of course.
When you got, I don't know, arrested at that filling station for feeling up that 9-year-old girl or whatever it was like 3 months ago. Or it had to be at least a year ago. Were you blacked out? I mean, did you not know what you were doing?
No, that didn't happen, A. And B, no, that night I was not blacked out. That night. And it wasn't a feeling.
But you will. And also, by the way, what is so we talked about like sobriety and creativity.
Can I have another sody pop?
What about,
just make it two.
What about sexuality?
He's making me thirsty.
What has the sobriety done to that?
I tend to be more straight when I'm sober.
Oh, really?
Weird enough.
No.
I dream about, there was a girl that kind of broke my heart. I hate to even give her that much fucking power.
Mm-hmm.
It's great that we can swear, by the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Crying is cool, too. I saw you cry on Sober House. I know you got it in you. That was definitely not your last tear.
Oh, God, no. Come on. So my thing is that there was a girl just a month ago or about a month or two ago, and it was the first girl in a long time where I'm like, you know what? I think it's going to happen.
Oh, really?
I was telling my friends, I'm like, and when I say I think it's going to happen, because it can happen any time of the day for me, I meant I'm ready to fuck again. Mm. I was finally ready because I had been smashed by girls left and right, left all over the place. And there was this one girl who, gosh, she was so pretty and she was young and fun and smart.
Mm.
And I said, I had her alone one time and I said, I feel sexually attracted to you. And she said, oh yeah, we're going to be fucking. And then I started dreaming about her at night. And then suddenly some guy came in, one of my friends came in and swooped her away, and I cut her out of my life immediately.
Really?
I said, I didn't even say goodbye. I just won't have her over. And I need to do that. Clip the cancer immediately.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but look, for a guy who's, you know, loved and lost as much as you've done.
How did you know that?
Well, because I've seen some of your girlfriends, and Andy Dick, maybe even more than David Spade, pisses you off when you see all the young poontang he has nailed. You know that part where you get angry? You get angry? Like, you know, guys do this to other guys. Like, when you see, like, when you go, you mean he was hitting that? He was nailing that?
I'll tell you, you can see that one of them on my MySpace. I keep her up there, and she doesn't want me to have her up on my top friends. Her name's Lisa.
Well,
I hit my glass ceiling with her.
But Andy,
the hottest girl I've ever seen, let alone been with.
But
I was with her for like 5 years, but she's the hottest girl I've ever seen.
But then when you mix in the bisexuality, it makes the straight guys even angrier. It really does. Donnie, you would leap across this office and start choking Andy if you saw the hot 19-year-olds he's nailed in the last 20. You know what I'd love to do?
It's funny, though, that he gets upset, you know, losing one.
He's
got that volume.
But now,
it's not about
this
losing.
Is real.
You know what I'd suggest, though, if you want to cut him off? hit him with a pie first and then say,
Donnie, Andy, you'll enjoy this story. Donnie and I used to live together.
Mm-hmm.
And
back in the 70s, he looks like he's from the 70s.
He does.
What is wrong with his hair and his mustache?
He's just cultivating a porn star look. But Donnie and I lived together. We had our first apartment over in North Hollywood. We shared a futon. So I've bedded down with a man myself, yes, for a number of years. And when a chick used to dump Donnie, they would get a pie in the face.
Why?
Donnie.
Seriously.
Seriously. And I don't mean shaving cream pie. I mean Marie Callender's or 420.
That would be like apple pie.
Yeah, like a serious pie.
You've got to use a cream pie.
It has to be a cream pie.
Right. And you nail them with a pie. And, the word got out about Donnie and his pies. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the chicks didn't trust Donnie, because he was hiding the pie somewhere.
That's usually on the way out.
And one time on the way out, he hid the pie on my truck bumper, took a little walk with his gal pal, said, I don't have any pies. They walked down the street at night. They stopped. He was leaning against my car, and he hit her with a pie. But what used to freak me out is I was starving all of the time. Donnie, please tell everyone how starving I was.
He'd get, mad. He looked like he wanted to hit me after he knew that the pie landed on the ground and I did it to a girl.
I grew up like a fucking raccoon in a dumpster at a campground.
I know.
And that's all I did was forage for food. And I just forage. And my parents never had any food and they never gave me any fucking money. And all I did was eat. And so I'd go to Donnie's house and I'd go to everyone's house and I'd clean out their fridge. And I'd clean out everything. And I was always looking for food.
And so hearing that he wasted a perfectly good pie on a girl's fucking face.
What would happen?
What
would happen is I would come home from work and I would see this 420 pie carton in the fridge. I'd be like, holy shit, what happened? What's the occasion? And Donnie's like, no, I'm going to hit Melanie in the face with that. And I'd be like, oh, Jesus, Don, let me just eat the pie and we'll put shaving cream in the tank. And he's like, no. One time, I went out and ate one out of the driveway.
One time.
All right, every time, I would follow him out to the street and pick it up out of the street because it would land, it would have asphalt and shit. Big chunks to it. But it was still edible.
Well, you're far from that now.
I would eat it right off the ground.
You're far from that.
All right.
We're in a mansion.
Let's get back to Andy.
We're in a mansion now.
So, Andy.
We're in a mansion.
Thank you.
I love your house.
Yes. I appreciate it. So, Andy, you went to Sober Living with Dr.
Fields
Drew.
This was W.C. Fields' house.
No. You went to Sober Living.
Right.
How was that? Because the episode I just watched, Shifty.
Yes.
Was on the loose. Seth had gone AWOL.
Okay.
And,
so you're halfway through.
The team was pretty broken up.
Yes.
People were chasing
him. Well, Seth and I have known each other. You and I have known each other a long time, and I've known Seth for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. I've known him for a very long time, and he and I used to party together, drink together, do this and that together. We got sober together
mm-hmm.
a couple different times, so we'd see each other in the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And and then, of course, ultimately, we're on this show together, getting sober together, and we're roommates on bunk beds. So immediately there's a bond, right? When I didn't know what was going on. I knew that I wanted to be under Dr. Drew's care, went to his facility in Pasadena, because I said, that I've known Dr. Drew a long time.
Sure.
And I said, hey, if I'm going to get sober now, I'm real serious about it this time, I might as well go to the guy who I know he doesn't kid around. You know how he is. He talks straight to me, and he's a doctor. He's not foo-foo-shee-shee. He's like, here's what we're going to do.
No, I always say this about Dr. Drew because he gets lumped in with the Dr. Phils and the mm-hmm. Dr. Lauras and the Dr.
Yeah, he's
Yankoffs
and
everything.
He's a real doctor.
You know what I say? He's a doctor that when you're on an airplane and somebody's going into cardiac arrest and the stewardess flings the curtain open and says, is there a physician? Is there a doctor on this airplane? Dr. Drew can stand up.
Yeah.
Dr. Phil can stand up, take a piss, grab another beer, and go sit down again. And Dr. Laura can stand up and walk over the person that's clutching their heart. But he's an airplane doctor.
Yeah, he's a doctor.
He's a doctor
he's
that when you're in an airplane and you need a doctor, he's an actual board-certified
physician. He is not playing fuck around. And yes. I knew that if I was done playing fuck around, I could go to Dr. Drew and say, Dr. Drew, I'm done playing fuck around. let's get down to brass tacks. Let's do this. Let's fucking do this. And if worse comes to worse and I need to get on some kind of medication, I'm open to that because I've never done that. Never done that. Well, in these last 7.5 – so first of all, our relationship changed 180 degrees, and he said it right to my face. He said, listen, if I'm going to be your doctor, I'm not going to be your friend because we've been friends all this time.
Right.
And I haven't been under his care.
Right.
He said, so now the relationship is going to flip. And I said, I don't give a shit. So I went into his facility, found out he wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, where the fuck is he? Because here I am in his facility for a couple days. Where is he? I was just coming out of the fog, this beer fog. And they said, he's doing another one of those shows. And I said, fuck it. Really? And I told him the first time when they did Celebrity Rehab, the first one, he had asked me if I wanted to come join the cast, quote unquote. And I said, no, I don't want to. A, I don't even want to get sober. And don't even ask me again. Don't ask me again. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't go and get sober on a show. Fuck that. But this time around,
it's beneath you.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was beneath me, and I didn't want to get sober. And even if I did, it's a private thing.
Right.
Right, you know? So this time around, I was at my wit's end, and I just said, I just want to be under Dr. Drew's care. He was up doing a show, and I said, just screw it. Put me in it. Wherever. I just want to be where he is. If there are cameras there, let them be. The other thing is that the first time around, they had offered me a large chunk of change to be in Celebrity Rehab number one.
Really?
And when I said no, this time around, I said, fine.
When you say large chunk, what ballpark we talking
like
about?
Like half a mil.
Really?
Really.
Jesus.
It, like half a mil. Not exactly, but right up there. And I said, you know, I was starting to consider it.
Well,
but then
wait
I said,
a second. Where do they get that kind of money? They're not paying Drew that much money.
I was going to get more than him. Well, because I was,
Donnie,
you know,
get the Jägermeister out of the closet.
Because they can't do that anymore. Now they're in the power position because that was they were launching it.
They
knew having me of all people would make it a hit. They didn't obviously need me to make
it
a hit.
How much they advertise dollars to
it's
promote
a hit.
These shows?
It's a hit, by the way. And
yeah.
And this last one supposedly is their biggest hit ever.
No,
any show on VH1.
You know, it's not really all about what the show's bringing in. When everyone else in the house finds out you're getting that kind of money, getting shit.
No. But let me make it clear that this time around, when I said, great, I'll join the cast, and can I have that chunk of change, they said no. Because it was the third installment.
Right.
I was not in the power position, and that money wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
They said, no, you want to come on and get better? Come on. But that money's gone.
Now that you're sober... And I can see this in you. Tom Arnold's coming on tomorrow, and I see and saw the same with Tom Arnold. Like, when Tom Arnold got sober...
He helped me years ago.
I could see him smoking a cigar like he was trying to suck a golf ball through a garden hose.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, just everything got ratcheted up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not one Coke, it's three Cokes.
Yeah,
it's not slowly puffing away on a cigar, it's sucking on a cigar.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to be watching TV, it's going to be... base jumping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everything gets kind of ratcheted up.
You're right.
Now, so have you been acting out? Have you been gambling? Have you been having a lot of sex? Have you been wanting to do, you know, have you been thrill seeking?
Caffeine and cigars. I started drinking coffee, which I just don't do, but now I do.
Right.
And I and cigars, because I don't like, I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. So I've been like you say, sucking those fucking cigars. I mean, sucking them down. It's like, I wish I could smoke one in here.
It is.
Can I?
No. I mean, yeah. I mean, you can.
You wouldn't mind?
No, I
wouldn't
care.
We can open the windows. And
yeah, that's fine.
Rick, can you please go get my cigar? It's on the Coca-Cola, red Coca-Cola machine that's outside in the courtyard. You'll see.
Yeah. No, because.
Bring the matches.
I can dig it because.
I love it.
You can't just pull away booze or coke or pussy or whatever it is you're trying to wean yourself off of and replace it with a cocktail napkin. You need a cigar or you need an airplane to jump out of or you need
something.
A pot of coffee to chug.
You need something, yeah.
Yeah, but ultimately, you know, whether it's energy drinks or drinking, you know, 11 Cokes a day.
Do you have an energy drink?
You don't. See, ironically... The people who drink the most energy drinks are the people who need them the least.
The least, you're right.
It's funny because it's the stoners that can barely get out of their own way and who think a four-hour day is a long work day, who need the energy drinks,
right. They
don't drink energy drinks. The guys who pound the energy drinks,
don't
Danny Bonaducci.
Right.
He doesn't need any more energy.
He doesn't.
Andy Dick doesn't need any more energy.
When you were doing the show with him and I came on in the morning, I was in the green room waiting to go on, and I said, whose bag is this? It was like a computer bag or whatever. And I said, it's Danny's. And you know, I don't care. I just started rummaging through it to see what I could find.
Did it smell like Axe and steroids?
Besides that, it had a pill bottle. I'm like, oh, I wonder what he's taking. I'm just
sure.
I'm always curious to know about people's love and sex life and what stimulants they're taking. That's all I ever want to talk about and know about. And so here I am looking, and it was they were caffeine pills. They were like no dose type. Pills.
And it's so caffeine. Weird when guys
caffeine pills
don't need to be beaked
taking
up
one pill would be like 20 cans of Coke
are getting beaked up. Mm-hmm. But Danny literally was a Red Bull. He didn't drink
he
Red
was.
Bull. He was
he
the
doesn't
Red
need
Bull.
It. Can I tell you something? Mm. I was listening. I don't know how much you want to talk about him. I like him. He's a friend. I was listening to his last show. All of a sudden, 97.1 went. We're out, and it shocked me. I couldn't even believe it. And I was listening to his show when he was talking about you, and I don't remember the details, but he was pissed about you letting the cat out of the bag about the thing. And then
yes.
and then you called in, and it was awesome radio, by the way.
Yeah.
Because it seemed to me like he was caught. Like, oh, that's Adam's calling.
Well, I was just, I hope everyone's sitting down. I was leaving the Home Depot in Burbank, and I turned on the radio. And, you know, it's one of these comes with the territory things. But, you know, one of the things about radio that I love so much is how people
really
can just tell stories that are total bullshit that make you sound like a total fucking douchebag. And I just love it, like, when you hear that. Oh, you hear Opie and Anthony, and they're going, yeah, I met Carolla once. He was a total asshole. And it's like, I met one of them one time. It was after the Hugh Hefner roast in New York. I talked to him for half an hour. I told him I love radio, and I told my buddy Jimmy, love doing your show, and it was nice to meet you. He came up to me. We talked for 20 minutes. That's the only exchange I've ever had with him, and I have to hear about how he's calling me a douchebag on the radio. That's
welcome
the beauty.
To my world, by
that's
the
beauty. At
welcome
least
welcome to my
you,
world.
You earn it, though. I'm a nice
hey,
guy.
No, don't. Come on. I'm nice.
I sat down with Jack Silver, the program director, earlier in the week or the week before, and I said how do you want to handle well, less the point is
I know I don't even want to rehash
earned,
that
you've
story.
Earned your reputation the well. Point is I said to Jack Silver, how do you want to handle this? And Jack Silver said, I don't know, how do you want to handle this? You got a great assistant, by the way. He brings you a cigar and no matches, no fire, no light.
Hurry up, buddy.
Yeah. So he says, how do you want to handle it? I said, how about we just do Friday? How about we say goodbye on Friday?
I already heard it. I was listening to the whole thing.
Well,
story.
For the people that
they
are listening.
They don't care. The station's dead.
Well,
let's
all
move on. I want to know why what is going on here and how can I help, because I live very close to you, which is surprising.
Oh, you do?
I live 30 seconds away.
Jeez.
3 minutes top with traffic.
I got to get a dog. Really? Really? So you can come up at almost any time?
Whenever you want, buddy.
Smoke cigars and drink my Coke?
Whenever you want.
And podcast?
Do you have a spare room?
Well, Andy...
do you have a spare room?
Yes.
Oh, I'd love to stay there.
Yes, it's down the hill where your condo is. It's inside of your condo. I don't know if you know this, but my spare room is in your condo. Did you know that?
Well, I guess I'm there then.
It's got your futon right in the middle of it. No, Andy is a guy who is super talented. And I always wish, and Andy, I don't know who you think is talented in the business. And I've gotten into trouble for calling a person out or two. But I don't think sometimes people know the difference between the truly talented people and the ones that are sort of marginal. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, people don't. Yeah.
And they don't, for instance, I will not speak ill of anyone, but people don't know how talented David Alan Greer is.
He is hysterical.
And how one of the funniest talented
people. Very he talented.
Is.
Very talented. One of the funniest people I know. Well, you know that I worked with him. My first big movie was in the Army Now.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a cast member.
Polly Shore was in that
Polly
as well.
Shore, yeah.
Probably not quite as talented as David Alan Greer.
You don't talk ill.
I didn't say he wasn't hysterical. Right. I just said maybe not quite as talented as David Alan Grier.
You're being nice.
I'm just saying if there were numbers handed out.
David Alan Grier is one of the funniest people I've ever met.
And that was Andy Dick hanging out at Adam's house back in 2009, the 18th Adam Carolla podcast.
Hey, Chris, can I smoke a cigar?
Don't even think about it. So that was the 18th Adam Carolla Show podcast ever. And that'll do it for today, for today's record-iversary. Tomorrow will really be the day, Adam's Achievement Day. That'll be the day that the first Adam Carolla podcast was ever released. And we have a lot of great clips for you then. Also, just a heads up, if you guys aren't doing anything this Wednesday and you happen to be in Long Beach, California, I'll be performing at Tantalum on Wednesday night. So come out and request a clip. Just yell it at me. And maybe I'll play it live. All right.
Sign your cast.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Give props to Kalen and Fondelier for covering for me this week. I've had a weird foot injury, but I'll be okay. And thanks to everybody tweeting me and messaging me your concerns. I appreciate that. And everything's good. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. Make sure to subscribe to Carolla Classics to get that, the Achievement Day Carolla Classics. And we will talk to you then. And make sure to give Adam a congratulations because the 11-year anniversary, it's quite impressive. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. My name's Chris Laxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo and get it on.
Engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
My name is Molly, and I'm a political science major at Kent State University. Kent State has these core values, kindness, respect, and purpose in all we do. Ever since I was old enough to understand the legal system, I've wanted to help serve justice, and I would like to be a prosecutor for the city of Cleveland and then hopefully move up to the county in the Justice Center downtown. Kindness and respect go a long way. As a prosecutor, you have to be kind to all parties of the courtroom to truly help everybody involved.